live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
Well,
goodbye, baby.
6:10.
Yes, I'm going.
We will get to the Michael Wolff book. Oh my! Yes, with Chuck Todd and goodbye, Eric Edelstein later. Yes, Edelstein, where'd I get that from? Edelstein. And Pat Brady live from some tropical island. All coming up when we talk politics. We have Hawks tickets this morning. Chris Kennedy wants to be governor. Boy, did he stir up a hornet's nest yesterday.
How about that?
Comments on Rahm Emanuel, the mayor. Kevin Butler's going to be on today. Butthead's going to be on. If you noticed, if you watched the playoff games, the good game was the first game. The bad game was the second game. But that produced Georgia versus Alabama for the national title. Monday night at what time? About 11:30 they start?
Yeah, well, based on what time they started the Sugar Bowl the other night. Yeah, yeah,
it's probably at 9 o'clock East, 8 o'clock our time kind of thing.
I think it's a little earlier than that.
Well, I hope
not
so.
Much.
Because it's a school night. But the kicker for Georgia wears these sort of Big Bang Theory glasses. And just he's my new favorite player. And who works with the kicker for Georgia? The former All-American kicker for Georgia and the legendary kicker for your Chicago Bears, Kevin Butler. So Butthead will be on, talking about the national championship game.
Kickoff is 7 o'clock, by the way.
It's 7 o'clock our time?
7 o'clock our time.
Well, that's a little better.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about getting out of town because it hasn't been above 32 in about a month and a half, Stuart Chiron, the cruise guy, will be on after 9 o'clock. And then that Potted Potter show that's going on,
mm-hmm.
on Harry Potter.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a good one.
Yeah, we got some people coming in about that. So a busy show as always at 6:11. Everybody good? Everybody good? Everybody feeling all right? Everybody
yeah.
all right?
Hey, we had double good. Digits yesterday. Yeah.
Yeah, it almost got to 20, didn't it?
Almost.
But we're still the streak. Isn't the streak is still on, though?
Don't tease us. Yeah, the streak is still on. We're hoping to get to 33 by Sunday.
I don't know. I'd like to see it go 14 days below 20.
No, you would not.
I'd like to see it set the record.
We were saying that before. Is this a record that you want to set?
Yeah.
Why? Just
well,
to set a record?
Because there's been so much pain. Why not set the record? Come on.
You suffer through the pain?
Yes. Extra day. But we're not going to make it.
No, I don't think so.
Sunday's going to be what? 35?
33.
Okay. Nick's coming up, so let's get to the top six at six right now.
Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel. It's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60 Minute Men.
The Bomb Cyclone. This was cool. Yesterday, we actually had a moment where we taught the weather people. Yesterday, Meghan Markle.
Yeah.
Is Morgan Corkle the one marrying the prince?
Corkmeyer. No, that's Meghan Markle marrying the prince.
I got to pay more attention.
Yeah, Meghan is the meteorologist in the morning at TV.
I've not met her officially. She seems delightful.
She's very sweet.
Okay.
Very sweet girl.
And Paul Conrad, who we know is delightful, yesterday did not know what a bomb cyclone was. And Dave, you brought this up at 6:10. I mean, you didn't say it the rest of the show to us off the air, mm-hmm. trying to get credit for it. But you brought it up yesterday at like 6:10.
Mm-hmm.
Before the weather people brought it up, before I brought it up, and it turns out Paul Conrad and Morgan Merkel,
Kolkmeyer,
both had to go to who? Tim.
They did. Tim McGill.
Tim McGill.
Our guy.
And it turns out a bomb cyclone is, in fact, a thing. Icy winds, heavy snow expected today in the mid-Atlantic and Northeast as powerful winter storms deliver rare snowfall to Florida. Yesterday in Tallahassee, they had more snow than they've had in 30 years. They had 5 inches of snow in Charleston, South Carolina.
Yeah.
I lived there for 2 years. They'd have done snow in Charleston.
I sort of felt bad for the people posting pictures of themselves and their families at Disney World bundled up.
Oh, Minnie, yeah. I need a blanket.
Yeah.
Have you noticed how my Mickey Mouse sounds like the Queen?
It does. And Mrs. Doubtfire.
And all three of them.
Hey, what's the difference between a bombogenesis and a nor'easter?
A bombogenesis and a what?
And a nor'easter. You know how the big nor'easters dump
it's
all
It's like a
snow.
Nor'easter on heroin. It's worse.
Okay.
Now, Dave, are you sitting down?
Yes.
You're going to Penn State this weekend.
Tonight.
Maybe.
This storm has already shifted east westward.
No way.
Yes. New York is now in the path. If it goes another degree westward, you are in trouble, my friend.
Really?
So keep an eye on this, Dave. You may need to bicycle to Penn State.
I'm not going by myself. You know, there's a whole team going.
That's a good point.
So I don't have to make these decisions.
It's a 14-hour bus trip. I think you guys might want to get an early start.
Yeah, isn't there lake effect snow around, like...
Indiana?
And
well, yeah, but there's that happens in June.
Well, that's true.
Right?
Yes. There's already cancellations at O'Hare.
Yeah.
You take a charter, though.
Yeah. It's a charter.
Yeah, it's a charter.
Well, you can cancel a charter.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know.
What time are you scheduled to leave?
I believe probably around 7 o'clock tonight.
Oh, well, you have some time.
Mm-hmm.
To make alternative plans.
Yes. Right.
Start driving.
That's item number one. Item number two is Chris Kennedy. Chris Kennedy is accusing Rahm Emanuel. And I don't quite know how this went down, but we'll talk to Chris Kennedy about it later. But there is wide evidence to firmly believe that black voters in the city of Chicago are not going to vote for Rahm Emanuel because of the Laquan McDonald story and because of violence in the communities and the school situation mostly. But accusing the mayor of a strategic gentrification plan to force blacks out of Chicago.
This was the most bizarre press conference that I've ever watched. I didn't expect this. You know, when Chris Kennedy or any of the gubernatorial candidates have a news conference, it's newsworthy.
Yeah.
But when he walks in with Bobby Rush and other leaders from the Black Caucus and
who endorsed him.
Yeah, this is just, you know, talking about the strategy and disinvestment in communities.
As a plan, not as a matter of resources and poorly allocated resources, but as a plan.
Right.
I don't know. I like Chris Kennedy, and I certainly like what he said as a gubernatorial candidate so far. But this feels like he stepped in it, and we'll ask him if he stepped in it himself later. Right. Meanwhile, what's going on with my voice? Meanwhile, Governor Rauner calls the Republican federal tax overhaul punishing to Illinois. Mm-hmm. Governor Rauner is going to need to make those comments within, say, a day of when they happen, not a week and a half down the road. I don't know what's going on with the Rauner campaign.
It's weird how he breaks bad now, all of a sudden, with the Republican D.C. tax overhaul.
It's 10 days.
Right.
10 days ago, we should have been talking about this.
Yeah, and the movement is to add more lawsuits now to this. New York is underway. They're going to sue to try to stop it, a high-tax state. The other high-tax states are going to join in on this.
Are we suing anybody?
I believe that's up to Governor Rauner in the Attorney General's office, right?
So we're going to wait 10 more days to hear about this?
I don't know.
I don't think we'll sue. I just don't see it happening.
Well, again, if Governor Rauner legitimately wants to be reelected, we live in a world where you can't wait. You know, a week on a story or 10 days on a story.
Absolutely.
Whether it's the holidays or not. Next. Speed skater Theron Sands is in Milwaukee this week to compete to win a spot on the U.S. Olympic team. Sands is a 53-year-old accountant from Champaign, Illinois.
Woo-woo.
Will skate Thursday in the 10,000-meter race at the U.S. Olympic speed skating long track trials. At the ice center there, one of the ice centers there. He's 53 years old. The fact that he can skate 10,000 meters is pretty impressive.
Very impressive.
I love this story.
And he only started skating like 15, 16 years ago.
Well, how about this? He's from Mississippi.
Yeah.
He's from Mississippi, and he is a guy that everybody seems to say is just a great guy looking for a chance to achieve a dream here, which is what the Olympics is supposed to be about.
Yeah.
Was an inline skater, a roller skater. He advanced to speed skating regional competitions and just loved it. He had kids that are currently 29, 26, 23, and 21. How about that? How about the fact that your kids are old enough to have their own kids to enjoy this as much dad out there?
That's very so cool.
But this is an endurance race, you know, and a lot of people start running marathons later in life. So, hey, good for him.
Or you go do it.
And didn't Shawnee Davis...
Come on, Vanderbilt, get out there.
I don't like to skate. I'm not a big skater.
I think Shawnee Davis of Chicago made the team again as well.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, but he's 12.
Yeah.
He's 35, and he's flexible.
That's old in, you know, competition, too.
Well,
really.
35 is 12 when you're 53.
Hey, wait a minute. You could take up speed skating.
Could. Not going to happen. Next. President Trump abruptly dissolved the White House commission he's charged with investigating voter fraud yesterday. He had claimed without evidence that widespread irregularities had cost him the popular vote. Remember, there were 3 million illegal votes?
Right.
Yeah, the voter commission was disbanded yesterday.
Voter fraud.
The White House statement said that it's because the states weren't cooperating.
Right.
Oh, yeah, okay. Next. And Donald Trump struck back at Steve Bannon. And before anybody, even the most ardent Trump haters, don't start treating Steve Bannon like a hero here. Mm-hmm. This is a guy who supported Roy Moore from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But Steve Bannon, in an apparent attempt to save himself, who believes that Trump is going down, spoke on the record and has not denied any of it some 18 hours later, saying the most powerfully hurtful things about Trump, about Trump's children, throwing the word treason around.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not the only one. Gary Cohn, the chief economic advisor, wrote a memo that is detailed in this book. It goes on and on and on. Chuck Todd will be on in a little bit.
But there's one guy on Kian's Cochran show.
I don't mean to bury the lead, by the way.
And what he says will make us stay or go.
But the Hawks won.
Big. DiGiulio, he knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
And Nick DiGiulio, I don't know if you spent any time watching that Hawks game last night, but our Blackhawks looked as good as they've looked all year, played 60 minutes for the first time in a long time, and, got the payoff.
I'm with you, man. Yeah, it was a great game. And I'm liking this Glass kid.
You have to have him on every day they're playing.
That's exactly right.
That's what you got to do. Yeah, exactly right, man.
He was on yesterday. Right. On yesterday, we got it done. And we'll do it again. Hawks finally coming home, by the way, but they beat the Rangers last night 5-2 and looked great.
And they got Vegas here tomorrow night. Vegas plays tonight in St. Louis.
No, that's the back-to-back. We like
back-to-back.
That.
Back-to-back, yep.
All right, good. At 6:25, let's jump in with our friend Nick. How are you, by the way?
I'm good, man. Happy New Year.
And to you. I can't wait to see this movie, The Post. Please tell me it's as good as I hear.
Let me tell you something, man. The two main movies that opened this week, three movies open. One is a horror film that's just coming out, and officially the first movie of 2018. But the two movies that opened here this week are both really terrific. And The Post, in my opinion, Spielberg's best movie in 15 years.
Is that right?
Wow. I
think it's the best movie he's made. I'm a big fan of Minority Report, the Tom Cruise movie from 2002.
Yeah, I like
that
too.
I think this is the best film he's made since Minority Report, and it is, you know, I happen to be like a real big fan of films about journalism. All the President's Men is one of my favorite movies. This ridiculously overlooked movie called Shattered Glass from 2003 with Hayden Christensen and Peter Sarsgaard is one of my favorite movies, and this is right up there with this, man. It's a pretty stunning movie and really exciting and funny and suspenseful, and it moves like lightning, and I wish they could have gotten a good cast.
Exactly.
Have they worked together before? I was trying to wrap my
Hanks?
Brain
I don't
thinking
think so.
Of Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks.
No, they've never. This is the
first time. Okay, cool.
Incredibly, this is the first time they've worked together, and they're both tremendous in this movie.
Good.
It's just
beautiful.
Great. And one of the things about, I mean, it's about the Washington Post, and Katharine Graham took over the Washington Post, and these papers came out that revealed the truth about cover-ups and conspiracies that went through four presidents, and truth about what was happening in Vietnam. It was all happening when Nixon was president. The New York Times was actually beating the Washington Post to getting the scoops, but suddenly they got a hold of the papers, and it was a question of whether they're going to release them, because they could go to jail, they could shut down the paper, and it's about a group of journalists and a group of people working together to get the truth out there, and it's exciting, and it's phenomenal, and I just want to mention, it's got an incredible all-star cast, but I got to say, the supporting performance in this movie goes to Bob Odenkirk, and Bob is a Chicago guy, and obviously people watch him on Better Call Saul, and he's become this great dramatic. I mean, he was in Mr. Show with David Cross. By the way, David Cross is in this movie as well. But he really has a key part in this film, and he's phenomenal in it. And it's as exciting and funny and interesting a movie as you're going to see all year. It's really, really terrific.
Excellent. All right, you had a question about that?
I'm excited that I read an article, because I'm so psyched to see this too. Meryl Streep and Tom Hanks gave to the New York Times the other day talking about the Post and the hashtag MeToo moment. And Tom Hanks, I guess, said that that Meryl Streep playing Katharine Graham, the Post publisher, is just, you know, a tribute basically to women. And giving her the spotlight in this.
Well, yeah, because Katharine Graham's one of the most important women of the last 100 years.
Right.
And Streep nails it. She's great. Yeah. She'll get nominated for sure. There's no question about it. I mean, she gets nominated every year. Sometimes she doesn't deserve it.
Sometimes she doesn't even make a movie.
Right.
She's just sitting at home. They say they nominate her.
Meryl Streep nominated for Air.
Yeah.
But she's great in this movie, and it's a really, you know, it's funny because Ben Bradley, Tom Hanks plays Ben Bradley, and this is the second time that Ben Bradley has been represented in a great movie about journalism. The last time was played by Oscar winner Jason Robards in All the President's Men, and he was phenomenal in that movie. And this is an entirely different kind of look. And by the way, you know, obviously you guys know this, living in the world that we live in now, this movie is as timely and as important as ever, especially about what this movie says about truth, the government, and media. This is a terrific film.
The importance of journalism and the importance of truth.
And
that's
a free
the
press.
Entire premise.
Absolutely.
All right, what's this horror movie?
The horror movie is a film called Insidious, The Last Key.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is the fourth of the Insidious films.
Oh, I know.
I know. You have all of them on Blu-ray. But these are actually not terrible. I mean, the first one was really scary, and then they've kind of decreased in value since then. I haven't seen this one, but, you know, I mean, it could be good, could be bad. It's not a terrible series, and it's officially the first movie of 2018. So,
all right, and one more?
Hostiles, which is this really intense and terrific Western, one of the best Westerns I've seen, and I'm not talking about the hotel. Thanks very much. Enjoy the veal. That I've seen in a bunch of years. Christian Bale plays this army sergeant. It takes place in the late 1800s, who reluctantly agrees to take this Cheyenne family across back to their homes because the patriarch of the family is passing away. And so they encounter all kinds of stuff. It's violent. It's intense. Again, it's got an amazing cast led by Christian Bale, who is really remarkable in this movie. It's beautifully made, beautifully shot, incredible photography. If you're a fan of Westerns, this one's violent. It's very, very violent, but it's a terrific example of, you know, in the modern day, people making a good Western, and you can still do it. And Hostiles is a terrific
movie. Well, I mean, the Old West was violent, wasn't it, Dave?
Okay, that's really unnecessary.
Well, I'm just curious. I mean, you know,
from what
you remember.
Yes, yes.
Rocky's your next Film Club movie, and it's as quick as next week. So last-minute tickets, how do you get those?
AMCtheaters.com. It's $14, free parking, free popcorn. Rocky Remastered, the original, on the big screen at the AMC Rosemont 18, formerly Movie Co. It's this Tuesday night starting at 8.
Nick DiGilio every night, 2 to 5 a.m. Good talking to you, buddy. Hold the line.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Well, I have a very good relationship, as you know, with Steve Bannon. Steve's been a friend of mine for a long time. I like Steve a lot.
There's nothing to the Russia investigation. It's a waste of time.
He is not a racist. I can tell you that. He's a good person.
What do you mean what they believe? We don't really, I mean, that there may have been. I think, look, I was there. It's a total and complete farce.
He's a good person, and I think the press treats him, frankly, very unfairly.
Those intelligence reports do not suggest that the Russians tried to influence elections.
I would never divulge classified information.
I like Mr. Bannon. He's a friend of mine.
Awkward. You can see it coming now. Bannon sees Trump on the street. Oh, hi. Hey, you look good. Are you seeing any other advisors? Awkward. This book is something else. Chuck Todd joins us now. Of course, he's the moderator of Meet the Press, MTP Daily, the 1947 podcast. And he also does a show at his house on the weekends if you want to swing by before he does Meet the Press, because he's very busy. Chuck, I assume Washington's talking about nothing but this book?
Well, that and the fact that we've shut down today because of a little bit of snow.
Yeah, and are you sick? You sound like you got a cold.
I got the New Year cold. You know, who doesn't? At least I got my flu shot.
The mandatory.
Yeah, a little bit. Absolutely. But yeah, Michael Wolff. Boy. Bannon. I mean, the three characters here, Bannon, Trump, and Wolff, they all belong together in the story, put it that way.
Well, let's start with Wolff. Tell us who Wolff is.
Look, he's a longtime journalist, sort of culture, politics, media, less politics. You know, he's took New York Magazine on and off for a long time, very much a New York guy. For years would be the, in some ways, had probably the best relationship among media reporters with Roger Ailes. And so he got a reputation, whether it's fair or unfair, of basically being the Roger Ailes, you know, mouthpiece every once in a while. If he had something to say, and if he wanted to talk about how Fox News was positioning itself, it came through there. So, and look, and it's the type of New York kind of tabloidy reporter that Donald Trump loved.
Right.
And loves. And knows. Which is, so when you ask yourself, why did a guy like Michael Wolff get unfettered access to the West Wing and get to walk around and be the fly on the wall? It's sort of Trump's view of what a reporter is, his comfort level. And he's closer to Trump's age, so generationally, he's known him or known of him for 25, 30 years, right? So that's where this, you know, that's why I think, because trust me, the president had to approve of letting Michael Wolff sit on a couch, not anybody else.
Sure.
That's how that happened.
And the next move then, you know, the Trump move is attack the messenger. Obviously, the attack on Bannon was last night, sure, and will continue until forever. But when are we going to see Wolff is a terrible journalist and not credible piece?
That's got to be. That's already come. Last night, the RNC, which in this case is directed by the president, I mean, and his team, they put out an oppo file on Michael Wolff, and I found it interesting because, you know, they went in there and sort of went through times where other people questioned Wolff's reporting or questioned his sourcing, right? But then it was the last little hit, what they thought was a hit on Michael Wolff, that I actually think undermined their whole thing. Michael Wolff, during the 2016 campaign, criticized all of us in the media and said, we should simply be stenographers when it comes to what the president or the candidates have to say. Don't try to interpret what happens on the campaign trail. Just be stenographers. And I'm sitting there going, what you're saying is Michael Wolff wanted reporters to be stenographers. Well, does that mean Michael Wolff was a stenographer in this book? Because if he was, then everything in this book is true.
Yeah, and by the way, the number one way you know things are true is if the people who are said to be saying those things don't deny them. Bannon has not denied any of it.
Not a single denial. Look, I've read through most of this book now. It's interesting to me. I think it looks like among his primary sources, Bannon was one. Roger Ailes was another. A lot of Roger Ailes in here before he died, as far as his relationship both with Rupert Murdoch and with the president. And clearly the president's a source here. Quite a bit. So when you read through it, you see there are some people who participated more than others. That's for sure.
I just think the irony isn't lost on anyone, though, Chuck, specifically Gary Cohn's email saying, I'm in a constant state of shock and horror, and using the media as a whole, whether it be through the New York Times or through the books now, to get their message out about how it's worse than we can imagine. That was a direct quote.
Well, and that is, and look, there's a lot of it's unlikely Gary Cohn did that email. I'll be honest with you. Gary Cohn's dyslexic. Gary Cohn doesn't use a computer very often. Gary Cohn doesn't type. He's a texter. It's quick, short messages because he's just he got through college more orally. You know,
interesting.
A lot of people I've known dyslexic. Yeah. So I'll be honest with you. That rumor, that email. I have a feeling that email might have been somebody else reporting on what Gary Tacone told them type of thing. So, but that one, for what it's worth, we have some doubt about the authenticity of that email.
Has Gary Cohn said that's not me?
No, he has not yet. Yeah. On the email, he's denying that he ever did an email like that. It doesn't mean he's denying the substance of what was in the email.
For folks to not...
Gary Cohn has been fingered quite... Look, it's not the first time that somebody has alluded that Gary Cohn has said that place is more chaotic than you realize.
Sure.
So the problem that the Trump White House has is that everything that is attributed to Gary Cohn in that email is stuff that we as reporters have heard for months.
The important stuff for people that didn't catch this story last night and aren't up to date, it's understandable. You got a life. You get up this morning and go, what are you guys talking about? Gary Cohn, the guy we're talking about now, is the chief economic advisor for the moment, at least, though there's rumors he could leave any day for President Trump. Now, the Bannon stuff really attacks the kids, Don Jr., Jared, Ivanka. The rest of the book, in large ways, paints the president as completely and utterly unfocused and not ready and disinterested in the job. And the overarching theory seems to be nobody thought they'd win. And because nobody thought they'd win, they did what they want. Even the rules they did know, they didn't care about following because they didn't think they'd have to be called on a carpet for any of it. That seems to be where this is going.
The best phrase and best turn of phrase and paragraph that Michael Wolff has in this is when he compares the campaign. He goes through how in the final couple of weeks of the campaign, everybody in Trump's orbit had their post-election plan in place, and it was going to be great. Donald Trump was going to start a new TV network with Roger Ailes. Kellyanne Conway was going to get big cable, some sort of TV contract and big contract of some sort. Michael Flynn was getting ready to have more Russian lobbyist clients. And I love there's one anecdote in there of a friend of Michael Flynn said, hey, you know, taking that money from the Russian government is going to be problematic. It's only if we win. It was just everybody had it all lined up. And then, as Michael Wolff put it, it's like right out of the producers and Mel Brooks. You know, it wasn't supposed to succeed.
It's a great analogy.
I like.
And now the worst possible outcome was winning, because now all of their candidate Trump never was going to release his tax returns because he didn't think he was going to win. He didn't think he was ever going to need to. And now his entire business empire, which many people have believed is a house of cards, might get proven to be a house of cards. Had he lost, he never would have had to worry about that.
Yeah. I like the backstories too, Chuck. I mean, even with Jim Baker telling Reince Priebus don't take the job, and Ann Coulter saying to the president directly, according to the story at least, or the book, that you can't hire your own children.
Yeah, if Ann Coulter's your source of level-headed thinking, that's a problem.
Yeah.
No, and look, to me, that's why, look, the biggest bombshells in here is the fact that you have a guy like Steve Bannon legitimizing the Russia investigation. I mean, let's make no bones about it. That's why Donald Trump's personal lawyers sent a cease and desist letter to Steve Bannon, right? And you don't send a cease and desist letter to somebody you think is making stuff up.
Right. Right. No, exactly. You go up publicly and you say he's making it all up. And then you throw around threats of lawsuits and things. But here's the thing about the Mueller piece of this. How much investigative work do you have to do if the people are publicly fighting in this way and setting up the case you're trying to make?
Well, look, I think it can be distracting. I think it's more distracting for the congressional investigations, which I'm starting to lose more and more faith in all the time.
Sure.
Meaning they don't seem to have... I think they're running into the political problem now, right? You seem to have Republicans, particularly in the House, but even now in the Senate, who, like, okay, they're not ready to do the next step, right? Whatever that, you know, they're not ready to come to a conclusion. They're afraid of having to draw a conclusion. And there seem to be buying time and all this stuff. As for Mueller, he does seem to be having his head down. I think a lot of us are surprised that more indictments didn't come, both in late December, which many of our sources have indicated it was any day now. But it could also mean they're negotiating with potential indictees and their attorneys. So, look, I don't think this does anything to disrupt Mueller, other than I do think now Steve Bannon better go get a lawyer, because if I'm Mueller, if I'm Mark Warner and Richard Burr, if I'm Devin Nunes and Adam Schiff, at a minimum, I want to hear Steve Bannon. I need to hear from him.
No question about it.
He may have bought himself a ticket to Congress to testify.
The Michael Wolff book, Fire and Fury, isn't out yet. Yesterday it was Amazon number one, obviously, because everybody was talking about it. But at this point, just common sense should rule. And even the most positive and ardent Trump supporters, you got to ask yourself, why now more than ever wouldn't Donald Trump step up and say, Mr. Mueller, as fast as you can, finish this investigation. I will cooperate on every level because I want all of this behind us for the good of the American people. And if he doesn't do that, what is he hiding? It's the same question we've asked for the last 2 years.
Right. No, I mean, and why is there this focus on investigating the investigators? If somebody can find a fact that these investigators have falsified or made up, I mean, it when you see that all the focus is on the process of the investigation, who was behind the dossier, who was behind this, you have to say to yourself, okay, are any of the facts wrong? Right? Are any of the actual facts wrong? And that's where Trump runs into a problem.
Get some rest and feel better when you can. I don't know when that's going to happen, but in the meantime, whenever you need a giggle, just go back and look at the Trump statement that Bannon had no influence in the White House. It'll be good for a giggle now and forever.
Something else. Well, Sunday you get to watch more Michael Wolff on Meet the Press.
Oh, he's on. Well, yeah, of course he's on.
He's on. I have him exclusively. He's going to do it. I think he's doing his first interview tomorrow morning on the Today Show. And a second interview with me on Sunday morning.
Nobody will do an interview more direct, more better than, and more better. And nobody will have less of a handle on grammar.
More better blue.
Than me. But anyway, congratulations on that. Feel better, Chuck.
Thanks, brother.
All right, thanks, man. How about that? Michael Wolff out of the gate. Today, tomorrow, and Meet the Press on Sunday. The Hawks looked fantastic last night. Normally, when we do the replay and they win, we sit back and just enjoy it. Hey, let's sit back and just enjoy it. Right now, it's sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing.
Chicago!
Chicago Blackhawks open calendar year 2018 in the Big Apple tonight with a game against the New York Rangers. Here's Osterley, top of the right circle. Rangers on fires a shot. Save rebound. Score! It's Vinny Hinostroza! At the top of the Ranger crease, he got hold of a pass from Taves and ripped it past Henrik Lundqvist, and the Hawks now lead 1-0. That's put out to the high slot, a drive by Holden, he scores. And Jesper Foss may have touched this on the way in and redirected it. Either way, the Rangers have tied the score with 1:51 left in the first period. Ryan Hartman along the left wing boards has the puck, Hawk blue line. Passing out on the right wing to Kane at center ice to Schmaltz over the Ranger line, breaking down the slot. He shoots! They score! Rangers get it back, 12 seconds of the 5-on-3. Zuccarello top of the right circle to Buchnevich, right circle, moves it over, left circle to Zibanejad. He shoots and scores. It's a power play goal, and the Rangers have tied it at 2. Camp over the Ranger line to Sharp. He shoots, he scores! His first goal in 12 games! Patrick Sharp! Ripped it into the top right corner and over the glove of Lundqvist. And the Blackhawks lead the Rangers 3-2. What a shot by the veteran Patrick Sharp. Clear to the line by Saad, not out, kept in by the Rangers. Now Wingles gets hold of the puck. Passing to Saad at center ice with an empty net. Sent it over the Ranger line to Taves. He shoots, he scores! An empty net goal, and that's going to put this one away. Osterley in the corner. Tried to clear it out. Schmaltz got hold of it. Passing into Hartman to Kane. Hawk line. At center ice on the right wing. Backhand toward the net. He scores! Another empty net goal. And the Blackhawks now lead the Rangers 5-2 with 4 seconds left in the hockey game. And here's the horn. The Hawks beat the New York Rangers tonight 5-2 here at Madison Square Garden.
Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. They're going to bring you free Blackhawks tickets in about 20 minutes or so. And they just brought you the highlights from last night's fantastic 5-2 win over the Rangers. We got a break before the news? Let's do that. Quick break coming back. Steve will have your news next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You know, I think I'd be a disc jockey again. How many good disc jockey jobs are left?
You know, when I lived in Minneapolis, you were my disc jockey, and you were awesome.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Love that.
Is there any good disc jockey jobs left, though?
I don't think so.
No, I mean, Landecker would be back on if that were the case.
Well, Lynn.
I'd like to hear Landecker do a boogie check again. Raise your hand if you want to hear a boogie check.
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. We love Lynn. He's a DJ.
Hey, he's not really a DJ. He's a talk show host with freaky music.
Yeah, love Lynn.
Lynn Bremmer, you're talking about.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to Pat Brady, who is standing by in some tropical location, not wearing pants. Good morning, Pat.
Good morning, and I'm wearing pants.
And where are you?
I'm in Grand Cayman, getting ready to head home today. It's about a couple thousand miles south of you right now.
10 days in Grand Cayman with your kids. Pretty cool.
Yeah, it's great. It's a family tradition. It's great to hang with the kids for 10 days, and it's particularly nice to be in 80-degree weather every day. So it's been great. But time to get back to work. A lot going on.
Well, before we get to that, I just want you to know your timing has never been better. The amount of time you've been gone exactly lines up with the fact that we haven't been above 20 degrees, and most of the days have been, you know, 10 or below, and below zero many of the hours of those days.
Yeah, I saw one day the wind chill was 34 below. Mm-hmm. It looked pretty bad.
Yeah, so nice timing on your part. All right, so everybody's talking about this Michael Wolff book. We talked about it with Chuck Todd a little bit ago. This is a very, very, very scary portrait of the White House. But if frankly, it's nothing we haven't talked about over the last couple of years. It's more layered proof. And the difference now is a guy like Steve Bannon is going after Donald Trump. Now, I made the point earlier, let's not think Steve Bannon is some kind of hero here. He's a creep and he's a terrible person. And Steve Bannon is protecting his own hide here because he must believe, tell me if you disagree, he must believe Trump's going down, or why would he say this?
Yeah, I agree with that completely. And Bannon is a creep. But the thing, the last 24 hours since this broke, or 36 hours, is nobody's denying any of the statements that are attributed to them. Bannon's not denying it. None of the people are. And apparently the guy that got this Wolf guy that wrote all of the book and gave The Guardian and The New Yorker the story recorded all of this. So nobody's denying it. So like you said, everything we've kind of assumed or presumed was happening is happening in the White House, and it's a scary picture. And I think a lot of people are probably reading the 25th Amendment to the Constitution today, which dictates how a president might be removed. It's not, I don't say that with any joy in my heart. It's terrible for the country, but I think that may be where we are after everybody reads this.
Politico wrote a piece yesterday about it being the hottest topic in Washington, the 25th Amendment to the Constitution. It is only in the Constitution as a last resort, or in a case of a medical emergency, and that is the president is incapacitated and unable to conduct his duties and protect the Constitution and serve the public. It involves the vice president and two members of the cabinet jointly coming together to remove the president from office. That's right. That's the path we could be headed down. So in the meantime, as the Republican Party spins itself into the ground, where's Paul Ryan and where's Mitch McConnell?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think a further step in that 25th Amendment thing, I think they do have to go to Congress, ultimately, for two-thirds approval from both sides. But you ask a good question, but I think what the calculation they've made, like they did with the tax bill, is we've got this lunatic in the White House. We've got to do everything we can to get some of our agenda through, but at what point does he do more damage to the country like he did with this tweet about the nukes with North Korea, and we need to step in and maybe move the ball forward under the 25th Amendment. It's a good question. I'm really surprised I haven't heard more from leadership, and I wish we would. The only person we've really heard from are the two guys from Arizona, Flake and McCain.
25th Amendment was the most tweeted or was the most searched on Google the past 2 days, Pat. But last time you were in, you said impeachment would obviously not be good for the country at all. So where do we go from here? I mean, the statements are going to keep getting more and more outrageous. These, you know, tell-all books are going to continue to come out. Now Wolf's being the most damning, perhaps, of all. But where do we go from here? I mean, if impeachment is not going to be an option, what happens?
Well, I'm not saying impeachment's not an option. I'm just saying it's a bad option.
Right.
Invoking the 25th Amendment, it's a horrible option. This means that the country is on the verge of a constitutional crisis, which is bad. We are the leader in the world, both militarily and economically. This is bad for the world if this all happens. If there's a way to do it without invoking either of these two, impeachment or the 25th Amendment, let's see if we can get it done. But apparently, we've got a lunatic in the White House, a guy that doesn't have the intellectual capacity or even interest in being president, and something needs to be done. Maybe they just make him irrelevant for the next 3 years and see what they can get done in Congress. Maybe that's one option, but they're all bad options, and I don't know what the tipping point is. Maybe it's when we get beyond the filing date for primary candidates and the Republican primaries, but probably the answer, Andrea, is just people need to engage. And people need to make their voices heard. But you still have 33% of the country that no matter what this guy does, thinks he's a hero. And that's a true crisis.
Well, but the fact of the matter is, it is one-third. And the two-thirds of the country that don't believe in what Trump has done or what he could undo about what's great in this country, those two-thirds have got to quit watching the game and get in the game. And it starts with primary day, and it goes on with speaking to who represents you. And just tell them you're not going to put up with this and stand up and man up and woman up and protect this country.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for years. I agree completely. We need to engage. We can't get 14% turnout in primaries. We need to have 80% turnout in primaries. And the people, a lot of the people that I talk to, particularly the people in the Chicago and the suburbs that just think the guy's crazy, you need to get out and vote in this primary for people that are going to stand up to him. Or at least stand up for the principles that we all believe in as Americans and get engaged. Otherwise, we're in some bad shape right now with this guy in the White House.
The 25th Amendment, if the Congress within 21 days after the vice president and the two members of the cabinet declare that the president is no longer able to conduct his duties, and if Congress is not in session within 21 days after they are required to assemble and the president can't discharge his duties, the Congress shall consider the motion. I don't see a two-thirds number here. But anyway, we'll keep looking at this. I'm trying to find a fast and easy explanation for the 25th, but we will get it for you.
Well, interesting, in that article, they had to read the amendments to the Constitution to Trump, one of the campaign people, one of the stories, and they got as far as the Fourth Amendment before he got bored. I mean, there's 27 amendments. You'd think that the fourth being unreasonable searches and seizures, that he'd pay attention to that one. But he tuned out after that. I've never seen anything like this or heard anything like this.
Yeah, and the characters involved in the book include his chief economic advisor, who allowed giant hedge funds to still be a part of the new tax bill, so he gets to go back to Wall Street. Bannon, again, protecting his own interests. Ivanka is played in this book is to be really remarkably daft. Jared Kushner, a privileged little creep. You know, it's like an episode of The Sopranos where they're starting to fight with the family and the FBI comes in and takes them all away.
Yeah, the real interesting thing to me was this famous meeting in Trump Tower where all that crew you just talked about met with people from Russia, and the light bulb didn't go off in anybody's head. Treason. You're dealing with the Russians, who are our enemies, to get information in a presidential election. The treason, I guess they didn't learn treason at the Manhattan Country Day School. I mean, to me, that's so apparent.
Right.
And they just ignored it and thought it was great. I mean, talk about a D team you've got around you. That none of these people, including Jared Kushner, who's now in charge of the Middle East policy, or has been, really not a very good team around him. And you've got him, who doesn't seem to be interested or even care about it. To have these people around him, it's pretty scary.
And what's important is to note who is not in the book and who is not speaking out, because the people like Mattis and McMaster has a small quote in the book, though it wasn't given as a quote. It was an overheard and third party situation. Even Kelly, who, you know, was had some interesting sidesteps as well. But those are the people that are not talking, because so many of these folks who are still getting it done, and I suppose you can include the Secretary of State in this, could easily go back to their private lives and have better lives than going to work every day and what the situation seems to be. And they seem to be, and again, Pat, you talked about this last summer, they seem to be staying in the job to protect the country from the president.
It's the patriots. Mattis, Kelly, all these people, they're patriots, and I think they understand this. Andre hit the nail on the head. I just wonder where all this goes right now. It seems that there's been so much white noise around Trump for the last 12 months. Are people going to tune in? I hope everybody does read this, because the excerpts I read are just, it's alarming how inept this guy is and how out of touch he is and how much he really doesn't care about anything but himself.
The ultimate echo chamber exists here in that the president appears to only ultimately listen, even if he listens to anybody, to his daughter and one of his two sons. If he listens to anybody, that's a scary situation, because even Richard Nixon at his most manic was willing to put the country ahead of his own incredibly narrow self-interests and step aside. I used to think that Trump would do the same. I don't see that anymore. I see him having to be removed, and that is terrible for the country, as you've said many times.
Yeah, it is. And I think I'm just going to see how this develops the next two or three days, if it has any momentum. But I haven't seen much so far, but maybe when people fully reengage next week. But it's a big news week for politics, and this is a troubling development. Again, to me, the most important thing is nobody's denying they said this stuff or any of these conversations occurred. Bannon's a creep.
He's a terrible person. Where are the Republicans and where are the Democrats? This is where leadership ought to be stepping up. And are the Democrats coming up with a better slogan than a better deal? Eric Adelson on the national stuff as well coming up. Travel safe, Pat. We'll see you back in town.
All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Thank you.
Talk a riddle, yeah, come on. Get your fat car tickets, yeah.
We've got tickets from Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. Tickets for you to see the Blackhawks and the Winnipeg Jets. Remember the last time the Hawks played the Jets, Dave? They beat the Winnipeg Jets.
Yes, they did.
The Hawks have played very well against good teams this year and not well against teams that aren't so good.
They swept the Rangers.
Yeah. But last night, 5-2 over the Rangers. This is the beginning of the run.
This is
the beginning of the run. Last night. That's
You've
exactly
said
right.
That a couple of times.
No, I don't think I have. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at FourSeasonsHeatingCooling.com. You know how this works. I read the riddle written by John DeCuss, and you guys tell me who the famous Chicagoan is. First correct caller at 312-981-7200 is the telephone number. All right, you ready? A pirate in high school, then Marquette, not PC. A physician of hardwood, without a medical degree, a player for the Hawks, now coaching his offspring, the peak of his success, bringing Beantown a ring. Pretty good. Well written. Yeah. Eric Adelson, Eric, don't say it, but do you know who it is?
I do.
You do know who it is. Don't say it.
Song.
Do you know who it is, Dave?
I do.
Andre, do you know who it is?
I do.
Really?
I don't. Okay. I don't. This is really a good one.
A pirate in high school, then Marquette, not PC. A physician of hardwood without a medical degree. A player for the Hawks, now coaching his offspring. The peak of his success, bringing Beantown a ring. Who is it? Famous Chicagoan. First correct caller will be a big winner. And good morning to you, Mr. Adelson.
Good morning.
How was your New Year?
My New Year was great.
What'd you do New Year's Eve?
I was with my family.
We was with the family.
Yeah, the cold has got my jaw all locked up.
Yeah, I understand.
We were together. My parents, my brother, my sister, the kids, all the cousins were together.
Did you make midnight?
We toughed it out.
Yeah.
And as soon as midnight hit, we went to bed.
Were you ready to cave like 11:30?
Oh my god! I was like, well, it's midnight somewhere. Uh-huh. You know, you always do that. Well, sure, it's midnight somewhere. But yeah, I did. I toughed it out. But it was nice. Happy New Year to you guys.
And are you going to come out to one of these New Year shows that I do every year that I put on just for your family?
The next time I'm in town, I will absolutely do
it. Okay, good, good, good. We have a winner. I think it's a winner. Let's go to Michael. Michael, do you think you're a winner?
I think I am.
Let's find out. Who will you bring to the game if, in fact, you win these tickets?
Probably my daughter.
Excellent. Always love a good dad-daughter story. A pirate in high school, then Marquette, now PC. A physician of hardwood without a medical degree. A player for the Hawks, now coaching his offspring. The peak of his success, bringing Beantown a ring. Who is it?
Doc Rivers.
Doc Rivers. Exactly. You're a winner, my friend.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening. Hold the line so we can get all the pertinent details. Dave, tell us everything about Doc Rivers from the time he was born.
Well, I can't go back quite that far. Okay. But
what's his Chicago story?
Well, he grew up. He played at Proviso East, hence the Pirates. Mm-hmm. Then he had a great career at Marquette.
Uh-huh.
Coached the Boston Celtics to an NBA championship.
Yes.
Now he coaches the LA Clippers, where his son Austin Rivers is on the roster.
Right. He's a good guy.
Good guy. Very good guy.
Good guy.
I saw him play in high school.
Did you really?
He played. I was a freshman in high school. He was a senior, and they came. Proviso East was ranked the number one high school team in the country. Oh, he was the number one player in the country. They played New Trier. They came into our gym. It was like a NBA finals game. Yeah, and watching him play, even as an 18-year-old.
I'm guessing you guys lost?
We lost, but it was close. It was one of those where we almost upset the great team. But no, we lost. And
how many did you have, Eric?
Sitting in the stands, I think I had two hot dogs and a couple Cokes.
Good. So,
that was my stat line for the night.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
740, we continue. Eric Edelson's here. Eric, what's the name of that company of yours?
AL Media.
AL Media.
Yes, sir.
And you've dealt with politicians your entire adult working life?
Unfortunately, yes.
We're talking about the strangest political situation I've seen in my life. And by the way, I'm old enough to remember. I was a little kid. But at the age of, I guess I was 12, Richard Nixon said bye-bye. And Nixon seemed to have a circle of supporters and friends outside of his base, word I really come to hate. One of the things that scares me most about this Trump situation is he doesn't have anybody to talk to.
Well, I mean, one of the startling things, and the guy denied it, but
one of
his best friends, is quoted in the book as saying he's not just crazy, he's stupid. And, you know, maybe he said it, maybe he didn't. I don't think it's made up out of whole cloth. But if that's what your friends are saying about you, that's a pretty damning situation.
But friends, I think, really comes in quotes with Donald Trump. Yeah. And I do think, you know, as in the case of anything in life, when life is really bad, you need somebody to talk to.
Right.
Somebody you've trusted your whole life. Somebody you can lean on. Somebody you can bounce stuff off. I don't know who he has that isn't Ivanka or Donald or Eric. And by the way, I don't think he's talking to Eric.
Not talking to me.
Not you, Eric. Eric Trump.
Father Eric.
Oh, that guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've talked about this since he became president, and that we said characters revealed in a presidential campaign, and certainly when you get to the White House, your humanity is revealed, good or bad. And we all wondered, was this guy going to show another side of himself? But I think because you're so isolated, and if you don't have a support system, your personality is only enhanced. And we're seeing really how horrible this guy is. And I put aside ideology, put aside your point of view, he's a bad person. And I think when you have friends making quotes like that about you, when you lash out the way you do, when you have to talk about your nuclear button being bigger than the other guys, I mean, this is just, you know, we'd be laughing if we weren't crying about this. Yeah. It's so horrible. And I think the other thing about this book, you know, Steve, you've seen these celebrity trashy profiles,
yeah,
you know, where you have a bunch of anonymous quotes and you're not really quite sure on the sourcing, and there's no index, there's no bibliography. This guy had access to these people. He was in the White House.
Yeah.
repeatedly. He talked to the president, you know. So it's not as if this stuff is, you know, maybe some of it's out of context and some of it may not be the exact words. But I think if you take it seriously, it's pretty frightening image.
And when you're saying to your own party, you know, and you do this all the time, you know, with strategizing and whatnot, don't take the job. Don't do it. You know, people telling Reince Priebus, don't do it. People tell Ann Coulter at one point saying to the president, you can't hire your own kids.
Right.
You know, so all of these backstories going on, I told Steve earlier, that's what I find really interesting.
Well, and I think you go to those backstories, and I think they go back to that Russian investigation. Yeah. And I think to me, what Bannon was saying about the idiocy of the way those guys taking that meeting, and we've said it here before, I'm not sure they were thinking we're going to collude with the Russians and create and commit treason. But I said to you guys before, on any campaign, if you have something as irregular as that, you have to call the authorities. Yeah. And I think Bannon was making the same point. It's one thing not to have lawyers in the room, which is idiotic, but you call the FBI as soon as you're told you have this kind of information and it's from a foreign government, let alone one that's hostile to the interests of the United States. This is incompetence at the highest level that now may border on treason.
And Steve Bannon, who has proven to be an unbalanced, very, very bad guy, being the voice of reason in that bit of history is pretty remarkable as well, because if it played out the way the author and the Bannon claims it was played out, he did say, and he didn't call the FBI.
Well, and I don't remember if it was Chuck Todd who made this point or if it was Pat, but the other remarkable thing is no one's really denying the substance of what's in that book. You know, right. You may quibble with this word or that word, but, you know, it's the classic Trump go after the messenger and say, oh, he really didn't have any influence or that. But nobody's saying these things didn't happen or that the president's not interested in the Constitution or can't be briefed or won't read a piece of paper or has no interest in the levers of government or how to run this thing or understand really what the office is about. Nobody disputes that stuff, which is just really remarkable.
And the reason we always talk about the fact that an impeachment is terrible for the country is because the drawn-out process that you go through for that is a horrible impact, not just on our world image, but on our security, and also on the economy. Mm-hmm. Because if you like your 401k, if you like your IRA, if you're in the market, maybe in more detail than just that, you've certainly made a lot of money since Trump got into office. You can give him credit, not give him credit, whatever you want to do. But there's no denying you made money last year. Your money's going to go away because an impeachment will draw the market down, will suck the economy dry, and will hurt every aspect of this government. But if it comes down to a choice of leaving Trump in power or not, that's the choice that has to be made.
None of this is good for anyone, any party, any individual in this country. We will get through this. I believe this country is resilient. I believe its institutions can be battered and can respond. But this is a dark moment. And you know, there's another aspect to this, which is it's healthy to see the functioning of the White House and the functioning of your government and whatnot. And I think it's good to be skeptical about it. But there is also a level of symbolism and a level of wanting a sense that somebody's in charge. And, you know, look, nobody's ever in charge by themselves. But you want to have a sense of a level of competence, that decision-making is not irrational, that it's not impetuous, that it at some level, yes, we're human beings and we're flawed and there's egos and there's competition. But at some level, someone's making decisions that are in the best interests of people. I just think you, other than the Kellys and the McMasters, you have no sense that Donald Trump cares a whit about any of that.
No, and it's as easy as T-W-I-T-T-E-R, because yeah, the first move he makes when he's attacked on any level is to attack back. He doesn't do it on Twitter or anywhere else over much more important things. And I'll say the same thing I said to Chuck at the end this morning when Chuck was on. Now more than ever, if you're innocent, say publicly, do a press conference today, do a public statement today, make a speech to the nation tonight. I want Bob Mueller to finish this investigation. I will give him any resource he needs. I'm innocent. I've said I'm innocent. No more backstabbing. No more Twitter talk. I'll do whatever I can to make sure that Mueller has what he needs to finish this investigation, because America deserves the truth.
Absolutely.
Well, and the fact that he won't do that, and the fact that he hasn't done that, is the loudest statement in the room.
When was the last Trump press conference?
That's right. All he has to do. Last February.
I think the
impromptu one in the Rose Garden 3 months ago, but that wasn't even a scheduled event.
Yeah, the scheduled press conference was last February.
Yeah. How about that? Have one now. Have a year anniversary press conference. And just answer these questions.
We got to take a break. We'll come back. Okay. You got something you want to tease, though? Because that'll be fun for the audience.
Well, I just think this what set Trump off, I think, is interesting, too. We should talk about that a little bit.
All right. When we come back. Traffic, Mary, what do you have?
And traffic sponsored by Credit Karma. An accident on the outbound Edens at Dempster. Left lane is blocked about 35 minutes out to Lake Cook Road. Inbound okay. The outbound Kennedy only 26 to get to the airport. No big inbound delays. Eisenhower just a little snug outbound into Harlem. Inbound side of the Stevenson 24 from the Tri-State. Delays into Kedzie. And the inbound Ryan from 31st. A bit slow. Only 18 minutes though from 95th. That accident on I-90. The Jane Addams eastbound at the Elgin Toll has been cleared. Rest of the tolls are looking good along with Lakeshore Drive. Get your truly free credit score and free credit monitoring from Credit Karma. Download the Credit Karma app today. Credit Karma, get knowing. For traffic on the 7s or 8s or anytime on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. Mayor Vandeveld, WG on Traffic Central.
Are you behind on your mortgage? Well, how much scarier than life can it get than that? You see no way out? Well, you got to call Amy Kite of Keller Williams Realty Infinity. With Amy, you set a price and a deadline, and if your home isn't sold, Amy can buy it. Or Amy has a property management company that can help you rent your home. Working with Amy doesn't obligate you at anything. If she isn't doing her job, she'll let you out of your contract free and clear. Another Amy was moving to Florida recently, needed to sell her home as quickly as possible. She called Amy Kite, whose expertise on how the market works and how your home could be sold, produced, again, amazing results. Sold in just 8 days. And help her make a smooth transition to her new life in Florida. Call the only agent I talk about, Amy Kite. Work in all the counties in Chicagoland. 847-877-9881. State-of-the-art representation with absolute customer service. And, I mean, if you're even thinking about selling your home this spring, talk to Amy Kite now to make sure you have time to get ready to do it. Call 847-877-9881 or online at amywillsellyourhome.com. That's amywillsellyourhome.com, and you can start packing. It is 7:52. Our friend Eric Edelstein is here. Oh, by the way, Chris Kennedy wants to be your governor, and he'll be in studio with us in about, I don't know, 15 minutes or so. Kevin Butler, Butthead, will preview the collegiate national championship game. Georgia, who he is a, what would you call him, Dave? An associate coach? Volunteer coach?
Yeah.
Works for the place kickers.
Volunteer coach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And former All-America at Georgia. So Butthead's coming up as well. And then after 9, we'll try to get you out of town with Stuart, the cruise guy. Eric Edelstein is here, as I said. Trump going nuts. What triggered it?
Well, there were a couple reports on CNN I heard last night. One was that Bannon crossing the line, going after the kids, was one. But before that, it was his being angry that Christmas had come and gone, and the Mueller investigation was going on. And allegedly, this report said his lawyers had promised him that this thing would be wrapped up at Christmas. Now, let's take that apart on a couple levels. One, assuming they did tell him that, that's malpractice because, you know, Whitewater took years, the other impeachment stuff's taking. There's nobody who at any rational analysis would say this thing would have been done in a couple of months. It's just not possible. So number one, either they were lying to the president or they are completely incompetent. But it also goes to a level of his just not understanding any of this stuff and the degree and the level of severity of what he's up against. To think this stuff would be wrapped up in a bow and then to go off and be outraged that it's not by Christmas is just, again, I know we use these adjectives, but it's astounding.
Mm-hmm. I firmly believe, and this goes back to the adult daycare center comment that Senator from Tennessee, I'm forgetting his
Lamar
name.
Lamar Alexander?
No, the guy broke bad on him.
Corker.
Oh, Corker,
sorry.
Corker's the guy that called it an adult daycare center. Yeah. I absolutely believe it is.
Right.
And the attorneys tell him that, and then he's okay for a while. Because you think about the example in the book where they talk about they had a guy coming in to teach him the Constitution. And they said literally, as he's reading through the Constitution, he got to the Fourth Amendment, and Trump pulled down his lip, looked away, stood up, and walked away. Because he couldn't focus anymore, and he was bored. So if you go with that premise, which we've heard in anecdotal evidence all year long, last year, he doesn't read. He's not interested in the job and the stuff that relates to the job. And the most importantly, and it goes to this, he stops listening when he hears what he wants.
So you say to him, it's going to be done by the end of the year. We're pretty sure. Done. He's out the door. Yeah, and if it isn't done by the end of the year, you're going to pay the price, and I'm going to let you have it.
Well, he might have done himself better if he'd at least listened to the Fifth Amendment, because he may need to take it at some point. Because every time he opens his mouth, he might create another crime. So, you know, look, he's kind of indicting himself, and it's just disturbing. And none of us take pleasure at this. I don't. It's just an unpleasant situation. And the sooner we can get to the end of it, I think the better off our country's going to be.
As fast as possible. And the lack of leadership, again, in both parties is striking.
I asked Pat that this morning. Okay, now what? We all agree an impeachment would be terrible for the country, economically, just as a whole for the democracy. What happens now, though? I mean, where do you go from here?
Well, I think we got to wait for Mueller to finish his work. I will maintain, and I think I've said this from the beginning, the key is Republicans in the Senate. What I'm worried a little bit about is it seemed they were taking a victory lap on the split with Bannon and Trump because they hate Bannon. Bannon wanted to go after McConnell. In a way, I think they're thinking, oh, now we can work with this president because Bannon's out of the picture. To me, where we go from here is dependent on these Republicans in the Senate. The minute they break with Trump in a big way is the minute his presidency is over. That hasn't happened yet, but I think as his numbers continue to drop and this investigation goes further, that will be the key to watch.
And another important piece of this, I think, is this horrible, embarrassing, dangerous attempt to damage the credibility of the FBI and the CIA by a few clowns in the Senate and a lot of clowns in the House of Representatives, and they all ought to be ashamed of themselves, and they all ought to be thrown out en masse. Does that get louder today to create a distraction from the book?
Yes.
Or do they realize they're making it worse? Because here's what happens is you create this groundswell of the public going, hold on, we do have a problem. Then they're not going to get to keep their jobs. So that's the breaking point as well. So do they get louder about the FBI or do they get quieter today?
I think they get louder. I think the distractions continue. And look, it's kind of mutual assured destruction. You just continue to burn everything down and you say, oh, don't pay attention to that fire because all this stuff's burning too. And at the end, what do you have? You have a completely charred city. And I think that's what we're facing. And we're going to have to rebuild that. We really are. And I do think it's going to take some vision and leadership and courage, people not willing to play this typical political game, and stand up and speak some truth, both about this president, about this country, about both these parties.
Country over party.
And we don't see it today. We really don't.
The deputy attorney general and the head of the FBI made a surprise drop by to Paul Ryan's office yesterday. Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell have said nothing. Nothing. And you might go, well, what are they supposed to say? Well, they're supposed to at least show some authority.
I agree. I think Paul Ryan would break bad before Mitch McConnell.
I don't know. He certainly hasn't shown any backbone yet. And he needs to stand up and go to his people who are trashing the FBI and trashing the CIA and tell them to knock it off.
Well, and I think part of it was from the report that I read was really disturbed at some of the congressional Republicans demanding information from the Justice Department.
Which apparently they're going to give now.
So, but I think a lot of this is, you know, end up in the separation of powers and constitutional crisis stuff, which, you know, we haven't quite entered, but we're certainly on the edge of it.
Right. If you want to investigate the investigators, do it after they've delivered their report. If you don't like their verdict and you think their verdict was found incorrectly, fine. But you can't stop that process 2/3 of the way through or 7/8 of the way through, or however far we are through it, and claim that it's flawed. And that's exactly what's going on, an attempt to indict the people who are looking at who we indict.
And as you said, Steve, if there wasn't some fire behind the smoke, you stand up and you say, these things didn't happen. Let me explain to you what did happen. I want to clear the air. You know, I want to come clean. I want there to be transparency. Let's open it all up. But no, they change the subject and they say, look at the shiny object over here and let's attack someone and something else. And that's been his MO and it will continue to be his MO until this country, the institutions and the leadership and the people of this country say we've had enough of that.
For the good of the country, that's what we have to do. That's what's next, I suppose. Yes, the public standing up and saying, I've had enough. So,
New Year's resolution for the country.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, you can go ahead and have dessert. You can smoke if you want, drink if you want.
Don't exercise.
But register to vote.
In Cook County, register to vote.
Good to see you, man.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for the extra time as well.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I'm going to go back to Steve for a second. Steve, I just want to get clarity on something as a story.
Yeah.
The head of Intel is named what?
His name is Brian Krzanich, K-R-Z-A-N-I-C-H.
I thought maybe you had something going where you were promoting a brother or something.
Yeah, no, it's I have to believe that he's from the Croatian tribe because that's looks Krzanich's. A lot like my last name.
And the Krzaniches.
Yeah, okay. Krzanich, yeah.
Okay.
My brother from another mother. Maybe.
There you go. Welcome to the studio, Chris Kennedy. Wants to be your next governor. Happy New Year to you.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Nice to see you. Did you have a fun New Year's Eve?
I had a great New Year's Eve. I spent it with my kids and my wife, Sheila.
Oh, so,
no better night than that.
Isn't it amazing? And we're all of this age where you have to organize to get all the kids together. And it's like putting together a Rubik's Cube.
You know, I have four kids, but I'm one of 11. So I saw one of the best in action, my own mother, growing up, and good example. So I know how to do these things now.
Outside of respect for the family, how did the Kennedys ever get together? You know, for a dinner or whatever. I mean, it had to be like organizing a UN meeting.
It's actually very spontaneous. We get together all the time, and we have a great time.
So whoever shows up, shows up.
Whoever shows up, shows up.
I got it. All right. All right. Now, you made some news yesterday. And yesterday at a press conference about gun violence, certainly something you know far too well, losing your dad when I believe you were, 5 years old?
Yeah, four.
4 years old. In that press conference, speaking about it, the headlines are blaring forced gentrification by the mayor. And if people don't read the full story, the headlines make it sound like you're calling the mayor a racist who's trying to kick black folks out of the city. So let's start there. I want to give you an opportunity to clarify those remarks if they need clarifying.
Well, I'd say this. I don't know what's in the mayor's heart. I don't know what he's thinking on this issue. What I do know is the results. And the results are that Chicago is becoming smaller. And as it becomes smaller, it's becoming whiter. Neighborhoods predominantly lived in by African Americans. We're closing schools. We're closing health care clinics. We're closing mental health clinics. We're forcing people to live in food deserts, forcing them to live in pharmacy deserts, allowing crime to skyrocket. And the combination of those forces would push anybody out of the city.
Incentivizing people to leave.
That's right. And I think that is, in fact, what's going on. Whether it's an act of omission or an act of commission, it doesn't really matter. There's only one mayor, and he sets the tone at the top. This is occurring on his watch. So one way or the other, he needs to be held responsible. And that wasn't really what the news conference was about. It was really about the lives of people who've been affected by the enormous wave of violence.
And your lieutenant governor has as well. Talk about his experience.
Well, that's a better thing for him to talk about.
Well, he's talked about it here, but I'm just saying to remind folks.
You know, Rod Joy is, I've known him for maybe 15 years. I watched him raise his family. His son was home after college, walking, close to home. And was killed, apparently a robbery for a cell phone. And no one should have to live in a city where they lose a child. It doesn't have to be like this. And it's not this way in other cities. It just isn't.
No, and certainly when New York had their crime problems, they have found a way to get to the other side of it. Now, there are ways to get to the other side of it that can involve further trouble with the police departments, and sometimes community groups get in the way of a solution. Where's your position on that as far as solving this?
Well, I'd say this, that the major breakthroughs in New York were not around the talk tough policies of Mayor Giuliani, but instead community policing. And the tactics around community policing that were embraced by New York City and changed that city so dramatically were pioneered here in Chicago. They took ideas from Chicago and transferred them to New York and had great success. We had one of the great community policing operations in the world in Chicago, and then we defunded it. And when we defunded it, when we made the police force more efficient, I suppose, crime skyrocketed. And now we have to go the other way and reinvest in community policing.
Your mic's off. Hold on a second. Let me do it again.
Rahm Emanuel releasing a statement after the press conference yesterday, actually a spokesman saying that Chris Kennedy is joining President Trump and Governor Rauner in using cynical, politically motivated attacks about Chicago and its communities for his own personal gain. What would you say to those who are saying that this is politics?
I mean, if they're saying you know that this somehow is political slander, I'd say truth is a defense to slander. There's nothing I've said that isn't true. And the mayor has to deal with the reality of his leadership. And the mayor's people have to defend him. I understand that. But the reality is we have the second highest violent crime rate in Chicago in a decade last year. These are not good numbers. Places like North Lawndale had a 20% increase. I'm telling you, my family is the great example of this notion that crime, which can happen anywhere, will eventually happen everywhere. The idea that we can contain this in neighborhoods and that it won't affect the downtown core, like if you think that, you're delusional. Yeah, that's not what's going to happen. The Dan Ryan was closed 2 weeks ago. The inbound lanes because of a shooting at 5:30 a.m.
Oh, they're closed every other week. I mean
the Eisenhower.
Eisenhower was closed.
Yeah.
And you know that's what's coming. And unless we reinvest in communities and give people an option, the opportunity not to have a life where they have to commit crimes of survival in order to survive.
What would you say though to those who say that the police hands are tied? Overtime's been cut, so we have fewer officers perhaps on the street, and the laws that are written as they are in the state, especially when it comes to juveniles, many of these carjackings that have been occurring. I mean, that's the hot thing right now, carjacking every other day in Chicago, many being committed by juveniles. They're released the next day. You can't hold them.
Well, I'd say this. I think our police department is underfunded. We have fewer police than we did 10 years ago, and we had fewer community police officers. We don't have the robust training that we have, and we have an entire generation of older police officers who were there really to mentor the younger ones who are retiring. And the combination of all of that makes it really difficult to deal with a new wave of things like carjacking.
Let's talk about where the money's going to come from when we come back, because obviously it all comes down to that, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
How are we going to pay for it? Chris Kennedy's here. It's Kennedy4Illinois.com, F-O-R, Kennedy4Illinois.com. All right, so all the money's gone. We don't have any money. Thank you, Mike Madigan. And the state found a way to finally get a budget together months ago. It's troubled, and we got to figure out a way to pay for it. Certainly, the money to put more cops on the street is vitally important, but there's arguments in every sector about everything that needs money. Where's the money going to come from?
Well, I think there's several sources, but one of the most important areas we have to look at is the money that's being hidden by the corrupt property tax scam that's occurring in our city, our county, and our state. There are two buildings in Chicago alone that if they were properly assessed, just assessed at the value that they sold for, which is, I think, what they should be assessed for.
Yeah, that seems fair.
If you just fix two buildings, they would generate $1 million award every year in additional funding.
Just for those buildings.
Just for two buildings. If we just assess them at what they were sold for, we'd create $50 million a year in additional property tax revenue that would flow into the schools, $1 million a year in every ward for schools, $1 million a year in every ward for community policing. And the fact is that that's what should be done. And there's a corrupt system that is entrenched in the Democratic Party. And when elected officials like Rahm Emanuel refuse to talk about it, refuse to call out Joe Barrios, say, I don't want to talk about that now, well, they're contributing to the problem. And that's why we don't have the resources necessary to keep our city safe or to give our kids the education that we need.
Your chief opponent, Mr. Pritzker, seems to have benefited from this system of property taxation where the wealthy win and the rest don't. Unless I've missed it, he hasn't made any comments about it.
Well, I think it'd be a little hypocritical to do that, just given the notion that he used Joe Barrios' offices at the Cook County Democratic Party to make so many of his campaign phone calls. He operated out of that office, there, Joe's office. So I think the whole gang is complicit. They're working together, and they're going to try to protect a system that enriches a handful of elected officials and dooms the next generation of kids who are going to Illinois public schools to a life of economic servitude.
And by the way, Mr. Pritzker,
Mr. Berrios and Mr. Madigan are always welcome here, and they should show up and answer a few questions. But we are now in show number 1060 of Mike Madigan's invitation, and no response. Show up. Answer a few questions. It is the bare minimum of your responsibilities.
Chris, how will you deal with said conflicts of interest? I mean, it's just crazy to most of us that many of the lawmakers like the Madigans and their other attorneys, you know, obviously doing business and setting these no-bid contracts that the state gets approval for. It's just conflict of interest on top of conflict of interest, in addition to nepotism that runs rampant throughout politics as well. How do you start dealing with that?
I'd say this. I think we need to get the dirty money out of politics, then we get the dirty politicians out of government. We need campaign finance reform, and mostly we need to ban elected officials from having outside jobs that are adverse to the interests of the body they were elected to serve. We shouldn't let state reps and state senators be property tax appeals lawyers, because the state and the city live on property taxes. The fact that they're diminishing our tax revenue while spending that money is, well, outrageous. It's a hypocrisy, and we need more democracy.
There is the great problem federally and statewide and right down to your own school board, I suppose, when those who benefit most from the rules are obviously most reluctant to change the rules. One thing Governor Rauner found out is Mike Madigan, in fact, so far has run the state and still has a ridiculous amount of power. How are you going to work with Madigan?
Well, I'm a Kennedy Democrat. I grew up with Ted Kennedy, probably the most important man in my life. And, you know, he was a progressive liberal member of the United States Senate, but he always had friends in the Republican Party. They would rail against him on the floor of the Senate, but they'd go and pal around in the cloakroom or have dinner together afterward. This shouldn't be personal. People need to be held accountable, but, well, you don't need to make it personal, and people shouldn't have thin skin. And I don't, and I'm willing to work with anybody.
And that includes the mayor, to bring it full circle, because whatever your stories and your days turn out to be over the next weeks and months, challenging the mayor in your part isn't personal?
No, absolutely not. I've been talking about this idea of strategic gentrification in the city of Chicago since before I announced last February that I was going to run. And I've talked about it all over the state because, frankly, the rest of the state suffers from what we're doing in Chicago. When we push people out of the state, most of them are out of the city. Many of them are in poverty. And poverty isn't the absence of money. It's a constellation of forces that makes, well, long-term planning nearly impossible and short-term planning chaotic. And when we push these people into other communities that don't have the resources to care for them, don't have the mental health facilities, don't have the wraparound services in schools, we impact other communities too. We need to fix the problems we have in the city and not export them to the rest of the state.
Chris, Illinois was picked as the number one state in the union where people are moving out of. New Jersey was second, but Illinois, number one. How do you keep people here? Will you start with a tax relief? How do you keep people here?
Well, I think the property tax system is making it nearly impossible to stay in the city or the county. And frankly, it's affecting people all across the state. And the only way we can provide tax relief, and I believe we can, is to properly assess the big commercial buildings. If we do that, then we can provide property tax relief to everybody else. But more than anything else, we need a growing economy. And we have a situation in Illinois where we have declining taxable assets and the need for rising taxes, and that's the economic equivalent of circling the drain. Only one thing that has ever worked in multiple cities in decades, and that's an investment in higher education and in the grade school pipeline to bring people there. The city of Chicago is flourishing because it's now the largest college town in America. But are these our college kids? This is important because when we graduated from high school and college, people our age, we moved to where the jobs were. That's not the way the American economy works anymore. Today, the jobs move to where the highly educated high school and college kids are. If we give the world highly educated young people, the world will give us its jobs.
Going forward, there's this, you know, artificial line that has always existed, that the Republicans own everything south of I-80 and the Democrats have to control Cook County and everything north. As governor, you got to work with everybody. So this radio station is blasting all over the country and certainly through the state of Illinois and the surrounding states. So what do you say to the people downstate who want to know why you're not just another Cook County Democrat?
Well, the Southern 20 Democratic County Chairman have endorsed me against the opposition of Pritzker and the Madigan team. They did that because they face the exact same issues that many families in Chicago face. The idea that their kids are being forced to leave the communities that they were raised in, where they want their kids to remain. And that occurs largely because we underfund the local high schools and grade schools across the state as well. 75% of the kids who graduate from high school in Illinois go to schools that are so underfunded that those kids will have a hard time going to college or community college without remedial education. It's the same problem that we have here in Chicago. And we need to fix the funding. And if we do that, we can give every high school kid a chance to get a great job and remain in the community they grew up in.
How did your Uncle Teddy get those deals done that he got done? Was it simply a time where there were reasonable people on both sides, regardless of their politics? Because there's a concern amongst the most cynical now that we're never going to live there again. We're never going to be able to get to a place where there won't be partisan politics. It's the future of the democracy depends on.
Well, I think Teddy was a special person, had the characteristics, the personal characteristics to allow him to do that. Having said that, I think the notion of gerrymandered districts are hurting our country. When I was first voting, President Reagan fought for Reagan Democrats, that is, conservative Democrats that he brought over to vote for him. There was a fight for the middle. That doesn't occur anymore. Now people are trying to suppress the vote of the other party and activate the most extreme members of their own party because they live in districts that have been gerrymandered. So if you live in a Republican district, you'll never get beat in the general election. The only place you'll get beat is in your own primary. So you have to hew to the right. You have to move to the right to keep an outsider, conservative, right-wing Tea Party Republican from beating you in the primary. The same thing occurs on the Democratic side, of course. Democratic district that's gerrymandered to tailor a Democratic official forces that official in a situation where they know they cannot lose the general election, but they can lose the primary, so they have to move to the left. So you have both parties moving to more extreme positions, and I think that's a result of the political science of gerrymandered districts, and we should get rid of those.
So you'd support remapping?
Oh, yeah, I would. And okay. I think that's critical to the future of the democracy.
It's good to see you. I wish you a happy new year, and good luck with the campaign as it continues. And obviously, you're welcome back here. I appreciate you coming in to answer some questions.
Thank you.
KennedyForIllinois.com, F-O-R, KennedyForIllinois.com. Back with the news next.
The Steve Cochran Show.
The stadium rocks and swings, and it's 23-23, 64, 63, 62 seconds. We're holding it on our own 49.5. Going to try to kick it 60 yards, plus a foot and a half, and Butler kicked a long one, Oh, my God! Oh, my God! The stadium is worse than bonkers. 11 seconds. I can't believe what he did.
That's when men were men, and kickers were men, and kickers kicked the football with men's feet. What? What am I talking about? Kevin Butler. That's a Georgia call back in the day. I believe he beat Clemson, and he remembers like it was yesterday. Not that he remembers much of college, but that he remembers. Good morning, Kevin. Good morning, buddy.
How you guys doing, Steve? Good to hear from you.
Yeah, good talking to you, buddy. And that's a good memory right here in that clip.
Oh, man, that was a great Saturday night in Athens, Georgia, I promise you.
So what is the position you have now with Georgia, and how thrilled, by the way, are you that you're in a championship game?
Well, first of all, you know, it's great to talk to you guys in Chicago, and I hear y'all got a nice balmy day there. So
yes, that's exactly right.
I am a undergrad assistant at the University of Georgia, and I'm actually heading up to take my last class before I get my degree. You know, when I got drafted back in 85, I was four classes short of getting my degree, yeah. And gosh, we won a Super Bowl, and things started happening pretty fast up there, and I never got back. And, you know, my kids, both two of my three children graduated from Georgia, so it was an opportunity for me to get back involved. And once I registered for school, the coaching staff came to me and kind of gave me a little proposition that if I, you know, took enough hours, I could be a student assistant. So I was thrilled with that opportunity. It was something that I did. It expanded into a little bit more, and for the past 2 years, I've been in charge of the kickers and punters and snappers, and then I have sideline duties during the games. And as far as thrilled, I am overly thrilled with the success that Georgia's had this year and what we've been able to accomplish. So one more big game coming up Monday night, and it's going to be a heck of a battle.
Well, let me back this up for a second first and give you the rarely attained sitting ovation. How about a hand for a guy who's going back to school and he gets his degree, right? He's so much more successful than, say, Larry Wirt.
Yes.
No, there's that's not on my horizon. I can't be more successful than Larry. But, you know, it was just it's a personal goal. It was something that
Well, you ought to be proud of it, man. It's great.
Well, I am. I'm very proud of it. And, the first time when I jumped in there, I think I freaked some students out. They didn't know what the weird guy in the back was doing there. But it kind of got used to that. And it's been a great experience. I mean, you know, education 35, 37 years later is a big difference now, you know, with computers and everything. You know, we were still writing in those notes and going into the library and checking references. So it's a little bit more aggressive, but I think it's probably a little bit easier because of the information that's at, student athletes' fingertips now. And I've gotten through all the hard things, and I just have one, science with a lab. I'm going in there right off the bat thinking Breaking Bad, but I don't think that's that kind of
No, I don't think it is either. And good luck with the Bunsen burner. But the fact that you're doing this at this point in your life is tremendous, and the fact that you're coaching and having so much success as team is phenomenal, and I certainly think a good portion of the country is going to be rooting for you guys. Does this mean maybe more coaching down the road for you? Is this a new path?
Well, you know, it's funny you ask that because it's something that I really enjoy, and I think I certainly bring a specialty to it. Having kicked up there at Georgia, and then going and kicking up in Chicago, the combination of the conditions I had to kick in Chicago and the combination of a tough but fair coach, and Coach Ditka, I think it gave me that mental toughness that I don't think a lot of kickers out there have, and I don't think a lot of kickers know how to process stress and adversity in the proper way to be able to go back out there and do your job that you practice for on a daily basis. So I think I bring a very unique opportunity to coaching staffs that might want to, you know, look at me as a consultant coming in. I mean, Pat Fitzgerald is one of my favorite coaches up there. And,
sure.
If it came to the point where he was having some trouble or his kicker was struggling or punting was struggling, I think it's something that I can certainly step in there and help. And if Georgia doesn't see it being a advantage to them, I'm certainly going to put it out there because I enjoy it. And I think I can help. I can help these young kids because they're in some tough situations. You know, we went through one in the Rose Bowl where we missed a field goal in the first half, and then we came with an opportunity to go for a second one right before half, which was his career long. But, you just keep these guys in a positive mode because so many influences can jump in their mind. And, the best kickers are really the most solid between the ears.
Kevin, I want to go back to that field goal right before
halftime. By the way, Dave, were you there?
Was I there?
Yeah, were you in Georgia for that game where he made the 60-yarder?
No, I was not there.
But you saw Butthead. You saw Butthead at Soldier Field a million times.
I saw him a million times and covered him when he was here, and of course in that '85 season, and so many big field goals that Kevin kicked. But this kid, Rodrigo Blankenship, comes in there, a 55-yarder, and Kevin, that's what started your comeback, really, in that game, because you're down by 17 points. Yeah. He kicks a 55-yarder at the end of the half, and now you've got some momentum going in the second half. That really kind of turned the game, didn't it?
Yeah, Dave, it really did. It was something that we talked about, even during the week. We knew that Oklahoma was going to come out there. I mean, we weren't going to stop Oklahoma every time. It was going to be a game where we had to match them, and then we had to make some key stops. And that first half, the only thing that stopped at the first half was the clock. I mean, these guys were rolling, and we really just tried to concentrate on not getting three scores down. We always felt like with being two scores down, one play, we could get right back in it. And, you know, Rod had missed that 48-yarder earlier in the game, and it was really a good kick. He kicked it strong, and it just went to the left upright a little bit. So I just tried to, you know, talk to him about, hey, man, you're kicking the ball great. You had a great warm-up. Just keep doing what you're doing. You're going to get another opportunity. And when we got to that point, you know, the onside, well, the squib kick, which I wish they would ban it from football because it never works out for the kicking team.
No, it's dumb.
It certainly didn't work out for me many times. That's when I had usually Mike Ditka all over me in a very bad way. But, you know, a squib kick is just that. You don't know what it's going to do, and you can't cover it properly. I think it puts the kickoff team in a tough situation. Trey Crowder, our head guy, that heads up the kicker. We had practiced it all week. Oklahoma had kicked a couple off of that front line and recovered them this year. So we had done a lot of practices like that. And Trey made a super grab and hit the ground real quick. We got one play and set up for a 55-yarder that really did, Dave, as you say, it gave us some energy. We knew we were going to go in, kick off to them. If we could come back out, stop them, we turn around and score, and we did that on the first play of our offensive drive.
Unbelievable. All right, let's fast forward to that second overtime. You guys block an Oklahoma field goal. Now you've got the ball. Was there any talk there? Just center the ball and give your kicker a chance to win it there and go home with a win. And, of course, then Sonny Michel screws up that plan.
Right, with his perfect touchdown.
27 yards. Was there any talk about that?
You know what? It really wasn't. From that distance, as long as we didn't lose yards, we felt confident. Rod really doesn't feel more comfortable either way. I think when you get out past 40, he would much rather have it on that right hash. But we were going to be inside that 40-yard mark. You know, the main thing I did, and I told our operations guy, I said, you keep every player away from Rodrigo. You know, you get a lot of players that want to go up and talk to that kicker before a big kick like that when they maybe never talked to him before.
Right.
So you want him to stay in his zone. I don't even talk to Rod before he kicks. That's his world. That's his routine. And you respect that. So I speak to him. I talk to him after. I talk to him before kickoffs, making sure that we're all on board. But that was my only advice. Keep everybody away from the kicker. If he's got to get up there to do it, he knows how to do it.
I've been around Alabama fans during a game. They're as nuts as anybody has ever been about college football, but Georgia fans are just as crazy. And Rodrigo, Rod, this kid with his glasses, this kid is an international sex symbol. This kid is Big Bang Theory famous now.
That's a good way to describe him. I'm going to have to spread that around. He is Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, and everybody's pulling for him, and it's great to hear what a positive impact you've had on the program. Hey, I didn't think I'd be saying this to you at our point in life, my friend, but good luck in school.
Thank you. You know, it's really funny. I really should do a little stand-up joke on this because there's so many things that I laugh when I'm in there. And, you know, one of them, of course, my friends, my golf buddies go, oh, you know, who did you cheat off of? I go, well, that's an interesting question. I said, because at this age, I can barely see my own paper. I can't see the one next to me. So there's absolutely no problem in cheating. But it's interesting. I'm going to have a great Kathy's already planning the graduation party. It will be a vinyl theme party.
Nice.
And your albums have to be from the 80s because that's when I should have graduated.
Nice.
And you have to dress like your album cover. So it will be an epic graduation party.
I've never seen you not know how to have a good time. It's
I'll be
Kevin.
A little bit more educated this time.
It's Kevin Butler, highly educated Kevin Butler, who is joining his Georgia Bulldogs Monday night against Darth Vader and the Alabama Crimson Tide. I hope it's a great game, and I hope you guys win. And I got a feeling. And when I get that feeling, Dave, what happens?
Usually, well, I don't want to say it with Kevin on the line.
Yeah, let's just tell them they always win. I got Georgia on a late field goal. How's that?
Oh, perfect.
Right?
I love it.
I love it. I think the field goals for both teams are going to play huge in this. You know, both defenses are pretty tough. We're not going to be facing a wide-open offense like we did in Oklahoma. It's going to be more of a traditional SEC battle. I think, you know, you've seen them before on national television between LSU and Alabama and Alabama and Auburn. And, you know, these two teams got to where they are by being big, fast, and physical and trying to establish a running game. And the team that establishes that running game is going to have the upper hand in this one.
All right, my friend. Enjoy the trip. Enjoy the weekend. I know you will. And I hope to talk to you soon. Thanks for doing this.
Always good talking to you guys. Take care.
See you later.
See you.
Kevin Butler. How about that?
That's a great story.
Finishing his degree. Isn't that cool?
That is a very good story.
Very cool.
How about the 80s theme party?
I knew you'd be excited.
That's gonna kill.
You're all over that. We get you an invite.
Excellent.
It's traffic from Mary. What do you have?
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
My friend Sarah Chiron's here, the cruise guy. Now, he could be in Miami. One of two places in America that don't have snow on the ground.
Although it's still cold.
5 inches of snow in Charleston yesterday. 3 inches of snow in Tallahassee. It's snowing in Atlanta. That's where the championship game for college football is Monday night.
And in a dome.
I'm sorry?
In a dome.
Yes. Well, listen. You still got to get inside the dome.
I guess. Yes.
And Stuart is here to talk about how you guys can get on great cruise deals right now and make your plans, because the more you wait, the more you pay, the less room there is, yada, yada, yada. Hey, how are you?
Good morning.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. It was 75 when I left.
Yeah. Well, listen, you picked the right place to live this time of year. I can guarantee you that. And before we get started, what did you do New Year's Eve?
I was at home enjoying. You know, just, you know, family stuff.
As wild
tennis.
As ever.
Yeah. Just, it's just nice.
I never asked you this. Are there big New Year's Eve celebrations on the ships?
There are. It is actually very eventful, and, you know, they're always packed.
Like, would you say there's one ship that does New Year's Eve bigger than most, or not really?
Well, probably the larger ships. You know, okay. When you're dealing, like, with Royal Caribbean's Oasis-class ships, when you've got over 6,000 people on board, it's like a floating
city.
It's
like a city, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wild. By the way, on CLTV now as well, and also here on 720 WGN. Hi to everybody at CLTV, and thanks for watching. All right, so let's start with Alaska. It's a question that always comes up. It's colder than Alaska outside right now. What's the best time to go?
Well, the season runs May through September. And
what's the best time?
The best time, I'd say in early June before... You know, it's kind of before the kids get out of school. That's where you're going to find some of the best deals in later May, you know, very early part of June. But July is the peak of the season. That's when everybody is out and about and everything's open. The lakes and everything have thawed and, you know, it's open for business.
Is early June best, too, because you're going to see more ice then as part of
it? Well, you're going to see ice regardless, but you're going to see more ice. You're going to see as the waterfalls are thawing and everything is getting ready for the summer.
It's always spectacular, but it's more spectacular in May and June.
Right, especially when you're one of the first ships up to the glaciers, up to Sawyer Glacier, you know, up to Mendenhall. It's just it's a very special time.
How do those itineraries work? Do they go out of Vancouver?
Well, the most of the ships will depart out of Seattle.
Okay.
And then you have ships that'll go between Seattle and the Anchorage area, either Whittier or Seward.
So how long is Seattle to Anchorage?
It gets 7 days.
Okay. It sounds like fun. I've never done it, and
it's
yet
great.
People want to do it. So price it for me.
Well, I mean, look, you can get Alaska cruises starting from probably $699 right now. And lots of new ships, including this year, NCL's brand new Norwegian Bliss is making its debut. It will be the largest ship at 167,000 tons. With about 4,100 passengers. She'll be up there starting June 2nd. And what's nice is my friend Wyland, the artist, the marine artist, is actually painting the hull of the ship with whales.
Oh, that's cool.
So it will be
and pretty, it's weird thing is it's a paint by number.
Yeah.
Everything's about, you know, in the spectacular-ness of these ships is about the amenities. What's your favorite new amenities?
Well, I mean, some of the new ships are coming out. I mean, look, you've got skydiving. You know, we've seen rocket, skydiving simulators this year on Norwegian Bliss. They're going to have a two-story electric go-kart track on the top deck of the ship.
So you'd start up and whip down and all that stuff?
Just flipping around. The water parks are always, the slides are always, big, the zip lines. I mean, the entertainment, the dining experiences are just off the chart. And but even the going into the smaller ships, Seabourn is having their second brand new ship coming out, this year, Encore. I'm sorry, Ovation, and it holds about 550 passengers. It's a gorgeous ship, six stars. One of the nicest in the world. But the adults areas are just very nice, and the food and the service is just what really sets a lot of these lines apart. So the beauty is there's something for everyone. And Stephen, it's like this time of year, as cold as it is here in Chicago, I mean the Caribbean is in the 70s and low 80s, and the weather could not be better. And
the winds are down right now, right?
They are down.
Yeah, yeah.
But having the ocean breezes, but this time of the year is one of my favorite times of the year to travel, to cruise, because, one, because of the weather, and two, because you don't have as many families traveling, so the there are better deals, and it's also the peak of the season when the ships are back from Alaska and from Europe.
What's your favorite Caribbean deal right now?
Wow, where do you start? I mean, after the hurricanes, it's great that so many of the ports, St. Martin, San Juan, St. Thomas, are back in business.
Yeah, tell me about St. Martin. I thought St. Martin would be down for years.
It's not. It's they're going back. Some started late December. Others are resuming the beginning of January. I mean, they're back in business.
I've been to St. Martin on a Stewart Chiron cruise.
I have not. And, that sounds wonderful.
It's incredible.
It's wonderful.
The islands are great, and it's nice to see. And so many people are wondering, well, what can we do to help the people down in the Caribbean? It's not just turn around, donate, go on a cruise. Why? Because you'll be able to take tours. You'll be able to, with the islanders, you'll be able to, go into their shops.
That's
and allow these people an opportunity, especially in Puerto Rico, allow these people an opportunity to earn a living and for their family.
Wait, are the cruises going to Puerto Rico now?
Oh, yeah.
Come on.
Oh, they were back in late November.
So, but you got to hang around San Juan.
I mean, a lot of the ships that just started returning as ships were using San Juan as a port, but the ships that are based in San Juan had been operating.
And they probably now more than ever, they need the tourism dollars. They need the revenue.
This is the biggest part of their revenue is travel. And right now, with so many hotels that are unavailable to be able to go down on a cruise and take the tours, go to Old San Juan, it's a great time to go. Yeah. But deals, I think one of the best deals I found right now out of Miami is Carnival Cruise Lines, Carnival Glory. It does Eastern and Western Caribbean. Amber Cove is in the Dominican Republic. It's one of the greatest ports in the Eastern Caribbean.
I don't know about it.
Because you've never Carnival Corporation actually built this port.
Oh, you're kidding.
And it's a great way to go into the areas of the islands, and they've got all kinds of different activities. I mean, they've got surfing, but it's a great way to be able to start your day. But it's a gorgeous cove. It's never been visited by cruise ships until now.
How about that?
Then it goes to St. John, St. Thomas, San Juan, and then Grand Turk is reopened. But I mean, you're going to find prices as low as $499 per person.
And these are 7 nights, right?
7 nights. That includes your food.
you can't stay in a suburban hotel for 7 nights for that price.
And it's been very rare that we've seen $4.99 pricing on any cruise for a number of years. Celebrity's got Celebrity Equinox doing 7 night Eastern or Western Caribbean out of Miami. Five-star ship from $5.99. One of the ships, Steve, I'm really excited about is Regal Princess. Now, the ship debuted several years ago, and it is one of the love boats, Princess Cruises. But essentially unlock the Ocean Medallion technology. So they're going to have among some of the fastest and best internet coverage on any ship in the world. But there's no more tapping, scraping, poking, and swiping. There's no more cards. You're going to have a little medallion, a quarter-sized medallion that essentially can unlock your cabin door. You'll be able to get on and off the ship without having to scan cards.
So touch access and all wireless, obviously.
Correct. And it's like I could order a drink. I could go sit down. I'm not going to stand in line at a bar. And it's going to, they're going to bring it to me, and it's going to go right onto my account. I'm not going to have to. The point is, it's convenience. less lines. I mean, to get on and off the ships for some people, I mean, that's one of the things that
you're on vacation.
Enjoy too much.
You don't want to spend time in lines.
So what they're doing is they're giving you back a lot of your vacation time.
It's great.
I can go into a store. I can pick up an item. They'll scan it. They've already read my medallion, and I'm out the door.
One of our listeners is going on the NCL Escape to the Caribbean this weekend. What do you want to tell them about the Escape?
Well, actually, that's NCL's newest ship. It's doing Western Caribbean right now, which it traditionally had been doing Eastern Caribbean. Falmouth, Jamaica is one of my favorite ports in the entire Caribbean. It was built, you know, with by Royal Caribbean. Just there's so much to do. The tours to Good Hope Estate are outstanding. And a lot of people don't realize that Jamaica was the center bastion for slavery in the New World. And it was also the largest rum, you know, one of the largest rum producers. So the history dating back to the late 1700s, early 1800s is amazing. You're going to have a great time. But make all your reservations, your spa, your dining, do it in advance on that ship.
If you haven't done that already. And again, on the prices piece of this, because we will come back in a second and talk about some of the misnomers and the myths and the FAQs of cruises. This is from the 847. Steve, $699 for one night or $699 per night? Does your guess mean $6,999? You want to clear that up?
Well, all right. On the Carnival deal we're talking about, it was $499 total for seven nights.
Right.
Celebrity Equinox was $599. That is the total for seven nights. That's the starting price, obviously, when you get to Ocean View, balcony, suites, just like in a hotel.
Right, but it doesn't go $490. Just so people know, it doesn't go $499 to $12,000
That's it for
night.
Seven nights.
Yeah. Yeah,
and $649 was the starting price on Regal Princess, which,
right.
Again, the Love Boat. I mean, a great ship.
All right, doesn't include your airfare, but we're going to talk about that in just a second, and the things you should do, things you shouldn't do. How many cruises now for you?
250.
And your lovely daughter is here, is now a senior in high school. I've known her since she was probably preschool.
Yeah. No.
How many cruises have you forced her to go on?
She has done almost 70.
Wow. Have you enjoyed all 70? She's nodding her head yes.
Yeah.
It's 9:20. We're back with Stuart Chiron in a second. Your website, as always, is what?
Cruiseguy.com.
All right. Walter's Perspective is always available at WGNRadio.com, and it's sponsored by HearingHealthCenter.com. We continue live on CLTV and, of course, here at 720 WGN from the beautiful Allstate Showcase Studios on Michigan Avenue in frigid Chicago, where it's going to be a balmy, tropical 30 on Sunday?
Oh, I thought you meant today. 33 on Sunday.
Yeah.
Today
33 on Sunday. We can't wait. Stuart Chiron would call it the apocalypse.
Yeah, right? Today it's 10.
I love this. It's 3 right now.
Yeah.
That's true. You don't get this.
This is wonderful.
Yeah, you love
it. It's like you don't have a winter down there. I know. It's nice to visit.
You stay here at my house. I'll go to your house. At 9:25, let's go over some of the frequently asked questions or misnomers that always come up. All right? Should you book your airfare with your cruise, or should you do it separately?
Well, I can tell you the stat. 25%, only 25% of the people that go on a cruise that need air book it through the cruise line. Why? Because most of the time you can get the airfare less expensive yourself.
Okay.
Two, you'll be able to get a much better schedule and be able to plan it farther in advance and also get on the airline that you want. So this way you can get your frequent flyer miles and enjoy those remaining elite status benefits.
Should you book your off-ship excursions? What are they called?
Shore excursions.
Shore excursions. Sorry, the brain stops working around this time every day. Your
cold.
Shore excursions in advance or wait till you're on ship?
Well, you could do both. I mean, it depends on the type of port you're going to. Caribbean, I mean, it could be done on board. It's always great, just like booking the cruise, do it in advance. See what's available, because sometimes, especially if you're traveling with a group, let's say there's six people. I mean, in Europe, for example, let's say the average shore excursion may be $200 a person. Let's say there's six of you. You know, six times 200.
That'd be 1,200.
Correct. So if you could do it your own by yourself, get a private guide, private vehicle.
Right.
You know, do it for about $500 or $600 for all of you. You're well off. So it's great in numbers. Use those numbers to your advantage. But if it's just a couple of people, you're not comfortable, you know, getting out on your own. I mean, the excursions that the cruise lines offer are great,
and they're obviously all vetted and all of that.
Yes.
Dining. Do I have to dine with people I don't know?
No. Well, I mean, you're going to wind up dining with people that you don't know.
Well, but you know what I mean. Do I have to, each night, are you going to make me sit next to a stranger?
Most nights now, I mean, you know, they have flexible dining, so you can eat where, when, and with whom you want. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, they've got all these alternative restaurants, steakhouses, Italian restaurants. You can eat in a different place almost every single night.
Favorite restaurant on any of the 250 cruises you've taken?
Oh, wow. I could tell you the restaurant on Seabourn is outstanding, but I'd have to put on any one of the three canard ships, the Queen's Grill is one of the absolute greatest dining experiences in the world. The best food, the best service.
Is it a fork dropper, like a mic drop? Or you just drop your fork and go, that's it. I never need to eat again.
I guess you could say that. Mm-hmm. But I mean, wonderful wine list, but the food quality in the service, I mean, everything's tableside. My son, you know, when he was, getting a little older and we were doing a transatlantic from between New York and Southampton, England, he had pasta being prepared for dinner, and the portion size was six times the size that he would normally eat, and he couldn't stop eating it. It was so good. it's just a very, very special experience eating in the grills on board any one of the three canard ships.
If your budget limited, should you book an interior, not an ocean view, and use your money for other things?
Well, that is a tactic that some people do. Some people don't care about their cabins, but it is a hotel room. I mean, you are on the floating ship. You will spend more time in it. That's why most ships, you know, 80% of the cabins have verandas now. Ocean views with picture windows aren't as prevalent as the balconies, because that's what most people want. But if you are on a budget, there's absolutely nothing wrong with taking an inside room and saving the money. But it's just, to me, Steve, it's the greatest experience. I mean, I could tell you, after my first experience with my grandfather going to, from Miami to Freeport, I fell into the business. I went on, and I'm seeing all these people going on cruises. I didn't like it for the day. I didn't know why people were doing it for a week. Mm-hmm. It took 14 months in the business before they got me to take my first cruise.
And now you can't stop.
And I can go anywhere in the world now.
Mm-hmm.
And I could do it at a fraction of the cost and customize a lot of these trips and see places that may not be on the itineraries. Last summer, we spent time up in Valpolicella in Verona, Italy. Then we went to Florence, and we spent a couple days in Rome, and then got on the cruise.
Every place you want to go in the world is accessible by a cruise ship, either in port and a quick little side trip or right there. Your favorite destination now would be what part of the world?
Well, Hawaii is one of my favorite places to cruise, which I know is very big.
Where do you go, out of L.A.?
No, I'd fly to Honolulu. I get on the only U.S. registered ship, which is NCL's Pride of America, and you're going to spend a little over 100 hours in port. You're going to spend 2 days in Maui, Hilo, Kona, 2 days in Kauai, and then a couple days in Honolulu before and after the cruise. If you do a West Coast departure from San Francisco or L.A., it's 15 days, and you're going to spend about 50 hours in port. So it's 5 days up, 5 days back. So it's about 10 days at sea.
If you want to spend more time on the islands, fly to Hawaii.
That's awesome. That's what I like to do. If I would cruise and then spend most of the time, on
100 hours in port.
Yeah.
I mean, you rent a car. You got the car for 2 days.
That's tons.
Our phones have GPS. You can go anywhere that you want.
Right.
But all I could tell you is, we're heading for our eighth year in Europe. The Mediterranean is just one of my absolute favorite places to go. I mean, we've added on Israel, all over Italy, all over Greece, Turkey. I mean, there's just some great places to visit that normally would not be accessible or easily accessible land-based.
If the only time you can go is July or August, what do you recommend?
Well, Caribbean, Alaska, Mediterranean. Hawaii.
So just go wherever you want to go.
Correct.
Just know you're going to pay
everything,
a little more.
Everything's open. And what's interesting is, I mean, this year we're going to have 16 new cruise ships worth $8.4 billion being introduced in 18 versus 10 last year.
The business.
25.3 million people will go on a cruise in 2018.
Yeah, the business is good. We got a texture too that mentioned cruising out of Charleston, South Carolina. I live there. I don't think of that as a cruise port.
There, Carnival has one ship there, and it does seven night. It goes on 4 and 5 nights, and it goes down to Florida and the Bahamas.
Yeah, they said they loved it completely. All right, leave us with one good deal.
Well, I guess You know, we mentioned so many. I mean, you know, there's Celebrity, there's Royal Caribbean, Carnival, Holland America. You know, Holland America's got their new Cummings Dam is going to be back in Fort Lauderdale doing 7 nights. Windstar, I think, is going to be some of the best deals. Those are the sail ships, and they also have the three original seaborne ships out of St. Thomas. I mean, I was seeing pricing at $1,200 or $1,300, which is about $1,400 off. Normally, they leave out of St. Martin. St. Martin wasn't going to be able to handle their ship, so they're going to be leaving out of San Juan. It's a great – there's so many options, Steve. And all I can tell you is there are going to be some great last-minute deals in the Caribbean for people. But if you're planning for Europe and Alaska, you really need to plan on it now because the airfare could be, you know, one of the most expensive factors.
CruiseGuy.com. If they want to talk to a human being, can they do that?
They can.
What do they do there?
They could dial on the telephone, 800-700-3881.
How about that? An actual human being. Great to see you, man.
My pleasure. Nice to see you.
Yeah.
Go outside. Thanks for the snow yesterday.
Yeah, go outside and enjoy this, Mr. Miami.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
I can't decide if I'm Team Daniel or Team Jefferson. Yeah, I'm trying to figure it out. Jefferson Turner and Daniel Clarkson are here. It's Potted Potter, the unauthorized Harry Potter experience, a parody by Dan and Jeff. How have you guys not been sued yet?
We have many times.
I'm sorry, say again?
We have many, many times.
Oh, yeah.
That's essentially...
It's not about this.
Yeah, that's why we're back here promoting the show. You know, we've got to get the money back.
How do you know each other? How'd you meet?
We met years ago on the streets of London. I was doing a one-man storytelling busking gig in 2004, I think, in Covent Garden.
Okay.
I think it was Treasure Island I was doing, and just confusing people and not making any money. And Dan saw me, and we think we'd sort of had a couple of mutual friends beforehand.
What were you doing, Daniel?
Me? I'd actually come from a meeting with a PR company where they're like, we need to do something for the launch of the sixth book.
Okay.
And I pitched this idea of doing all five books in 5 minutes as a sort of midnight launch. And I was walking down the street, and I needed someone to play Harry Potter.
And you saw him?
Well, I figured if
Harry Potter walked into your life.
If I squinted and looked the other way, he looked just like Daniel Radcliffe.
Yeah. Lightning bolt tattoo on his forehead and everything.
Yeah, well, once I punched him,
Right. It's been a really hard 12 years since. I used to look beautiful.
But you guys, we should say first that you guys are fans.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
because we don't want to turn off Harry Potter fans here. We want our Harry Potter fans to understand you're going to have a great time.
The show comes from a place of love, and it's a real homage. And, I mean, the reason I took the gig with the PR company, first of all, was to get the book before anyone else.
Uh-huh.
I was like, how do I get to the front of the queue and push children out the way to get this book legitimately? And that's
and look less weird doing it.
Exactly, yeah.
Potted Potter, the unauthorized Harry Potter or Harry Experience, parody by Dan and Jeff at the Broadway Playhouse at Watertower Place. It's right down the street.
Yeah, I know. I have to see this. Justin Kaufman takes his son every year, and he said every year it just gets better.
You add
different things, obviously. Yeah.
It's very, we put in a lot of different pop culture as well.
Yeah.
So obviously, I think we were talking the other day when we started doing the show, we had a Rihanna's Umbrella reference. Now, if we did that now, people would be like,
that?
Come on, guys. Come on. I don't even remember that.
Come on.
That's how old we are.
Yeah.
So there was five books when you conceptualized this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many in the end?
Seven books, eight films. It's good I know
it's
this stuff.
Yeah, it's like
this time of the morning, we'd be in trouble.
And just, taking a look at one of the Potter films, because I saw them all and my kids are there, grown up, you know, it takes a little bit to process. And I was at the Disney Harry Potter, what do they call it? Harry Potter Land? Harry Potter Georgia. Where, I'm telling you, do not mess with those folks.
No,
they're
absolutely
not. They're buying $75 magic wands. Yep. I don't know how many potions and spells were whipped on me. but it's this whole multicultural thing, and you took seven books and eight movies and condensed it into how long?
70 minutes. There we go. Yeah, I mean, we take someone's years of hard work and we condense it down into an hour and a half. You know, they're really proud of us.
The obvious stupid question is, have you heard from the author?
We've met her actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
We met her a few years ago, and she knew who we were, and that was it. We were that sort of dropped the mic. That was the moment. Yeah, we were very excited.
And she wasn't saying, "Get them out of here. Move them away."
Well, I mean, the embarrassing, the conversation when she went. Someone said, "Oh, these are the Potted Potter guys," and she went, "Oh, you must be Dan." And I just looked at a star and went, "Yeah, I'm Dan." And went, "Good. So how are things going?" And went, "I'm Dan." And then Jeff's giggling like a girl, and you could see she looked at us for a minute and went, "Okay, good boys, thanks." Yeah, yeah.
You're not a threat.
Yeah, so that was our chat with her.
How are you surprised, and not at the success of the play, but just that this has lasted for, you know, certain things become fads and whatnot, but this is like Star Wars. Yeah, it just keeps reinventing itself.
I mean, it's like Beatlemania for books, wasn't it? I don't think ever you'll see queues at a bookstore at midnight with people screaming to get their hand on a book. I mean, we were saying the other day that kids will never understand what it was like to wait 2 years for the next installment. Now they can just go down to the store and buy them all. They have it easy, these millennials.
And I mean, of course there's going to be another one at some point, but this feels like a once in a generation thing. Yeah,
absolutely. We can't, you know, other things come out and they get sort of a bit of PR behind them or whatever, but nothing has come close to it. And the last book came out in 2007, I think. So that's 10 years and nothing's come even remotely close. And you can't really imagine another book series doing what this one's done.
But I mean, we've started to have now, and it shows how old we are because it's been 11 years of doing the show.
Right.
That we had one woman come in with her kids and she'd seen it when she was in her teens. And she goes, "Oh, well, I came to see the show and now I'm bringing my kids." And you're like, "Oh, good, right.
Oh, I'm so, Dan."
But it shows this real generation with the books of how now parents are now reading them to their kids when they were reading them when they were like at college, and it's all moving on. So I don't think it'll ever go away.
How long before you two get real jobs?
I'm going to pass this down to my grandchildren. This will be the legacy. Then I'll go, "Here, learn this show. We'll carry on doing this."
If we could do anything else, we wouldn't be actors.
No, but this is everybody's dream. Yeah. Get a hit and live with the hit, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, brilliant.
What a wonderful problem to have.
Well, I mean, we're right here in Chicago, where it's, what, minus 16 at O'Hare Airport? We're from London. You know, a bit of drizzle's as bad as it gets there. We don't know what's going on.
I've never been anywhere where it starts snowing. Yeah. Everyone goes, "Oh, thank God it's snowing. It means it's mild." Yeah. Like, mild is snowing.
Yeah, it's colder here than it is on Mars.
Oh, wow.
Amazing.
Yes.
Wow. Well, we haven't done the show on Mars yet. Yeah, that's next on the list.
But I assume you're open to that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Want to be the first show on the moon, I think. There's an audience.
Why is the checks don't bounce? Come on. All right, how many times can you put this up in how many different places at one time?
No, we're only ever on once in the world.
I know that, you have to have had those meetings. You have to have had those discussions, right?
Oh, yeah. No, we talked to them. I mean, we're very much unauthorized, but we send the scripts to them. We have a back and forth with them. We chat to them. There's no way they'd let us without knowing who we are, but they've seen the show, know it comes from a place of love, and I think enjoying our spin on it. I want to say, I think we're just like a scab they can't get rid of, to be honest.
You're the flu virus.
They're fine.
They know if they pick us, we'll just come back slightly stronger.
Right. Oh, and the cool thing is, there are people from all over the country who come in to see the show.
Yeah. I know, there's no accounting for taste, is there? Really? The British accent gets you a long way. Everyone goes, "Oh, they must know what they're talking about."
That's a great point. You guys have families here, or you're single?
No, single.
Families back home who vaguely remember us.
Oh,
you know, you Skype back and wave at them.
Your team is so easy with an accent, especially a British accent.
Well,
these two guys are 10 times better looking in this country than they are back home.
It's like a superpower.
We're 10 times better looking on the radio as well.
Yeah, yeah.
They talk about scabs and it sounds sexy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Exactly right. All right, get your tickets. Potted Potter, again. The unauthorized Harry Potter experience, a parody by Dan and Jeff at the wonderful Broadway Playhouse at Water Tower. That's 175 East Chestnut. And I guess BroadwayInChicago.com, right? Mm-hmm. It's the easiest way to go about it. Last question.
I just wanted to, heaven forbid, hopefully your families are not listening. Have you thought about doing this with another series?
It definitely wouldn't be Twilight. That's what I can definitely say. Sparkly vampires is where I draw the line.
Fifty Shades?
Yeah.
50 Shades.
I mean, it'd be a different sort of audience, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that'd be good, yeah.
Well, I just know if you saw the sequel, you'd wish it was shorter.
Yeah,
so there's that. Great to see you guys.
Thank you very much.
I hope everybody goes and sees the show, Potted Potter. It's 9:51. More in a moment on 720 WGN.